You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Learn more at wearelibertarians.com.
Oh, the Johnny Rocket Launchpad is liberty. Each week, we strive to bring you the best guests in talk radio. The Johnny Rocket Launchpad delivers weekly interviews of noteworthy politicians, experts, and activists. The Johnny Rocket Launchpad is bringing the party to the Libertarian Party and launching ideas in your direction. Check us out at johnnyrocketlaunchpad.com. You can hear me, Kurt Nelson, and the beautiful Heather Nixon talk about the ideas of liberty. Rock and roll.
Hey there, Liberty lovers. This is Mark Clare of the Lions of Liberty podcast, where we strive to bring you great conversations about the ideas of liberty 3 days a week, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Check us out at lionsofliberty.com.
Hey guys, this is Roger Paxton, and if you're fed up with the government running every single aspect of your life, but you're not listening to the Lava Flow podcast yet, then what's wrong with you? Check us out at thelavaflow.com, or just go back to sucking up to the government. The Lava Flow podcast, striking the root every single episode.
We are supported by listeners like you. Donate per month or make a one-time donation through PayPal or Patreon at wearelibertarians.com. Welcome to We Are Libertarians. I am your host, Chris Spangle. We Are Libertarians brings you all of the irreverence modern politics deserves. Think of us as the love child of National Review and Mad Magazine. We explain to you what the hell is happening in our world today and how we can fix it by thinking differently. Please be sure to rate and review us in iTunes, like us on Facebook, like us on PayPal too.
MySpace as well.
Or Patreon at WeAreLibertarians.com. We are supported by listeners like you, so $1 per episode by pledging $5 a month helps us grow. And we're always taking your questions and comments via email at editor@wearelibertarians.com. If you are new to the program, we catch up for the first 20 minutes or so, and then we deep dive into analyzing current events in society from a libertarian perspective. This show is for adults by semi-adults, so please be warned the language is strong and offensive. Chief Diversity Officer is... Greg Lins. Greg, how are you?
Doing well, buddy. How are you, Chris?
I'm doing... I've had a day.
Oh, I don't know how you're doing this today. If I had been through the cruel and unusual punishment that you were subject to the last two, three
right.
hours...
We talked about that.
My blood pressure would be 300. I'd be stroking out.
Also with us is Kat Anagnos. Kat, how are you?
Hello. I'm doing well. How are you?
She was appointed a co-host of the show.
Yeah, I'm officially a co-host of We Are Libertarians.
You kind of free-ranged that.
Now like, it's the three of us, buddies.
We're the three best friends.
But,
oh, my God.
The gang's all here.
But,
oh, my God.
Then she started
She's
eating,
singing Hitler again.
Then she started singing. Then she started eating chips during the intro. She was singing Taylor Swift.
She wiped a booger on my back.
She did.
I did not.
Her hands are so greasy.
We are also live streaming to our Facebook group, which you can join at WeAreLibertarians.com. There's a link there, and you can watch the live stream. We are taking questions. Stone just asked in the group, so please feel free to ask. And we are now recording every show, and we're pulling chunks out. So if you want to share with your friends any of the policy points that we make, then without all of the 20 minutes of fun at the beginning.
The good part.
You just get right to the Greg's autism.
Weaponized.
Then check out our YouTube channel. Please go and subscribe and check out the playlist that has all our clips on it. I want to take a moment. I want to thank our sponsor here on this episode, and it is MartinArmory.com. They were founded with a simple goal, and that is to make buying a gun simple and affordable. Instead of carrying thousands of different guns, MartinArmory.com only carries 25. And what that does is it allows them to focus on providing the most popular guns on the market at insanely cheap prices. And for a limited time only, for our listeners, their prices are getting more insane. And they're offering free shipping to We Are Libertarians listeners at We Are Libertarian at MartinArmory.com. You just go to martinarmory.com, pick an awesome gun, and enter the promo code We Are Libertarians. Again, that's martinarmory.com, and enter their promo code We Are Libertarians. We really would appreciate you supporting this great small business, this great libertarian business at martinarmory.com as they support us. Again, when they support us, they're supporting you, and so please go to martinarmory.com. You know, follow them. Sign up for their newsletter.
Buy all their weapons.
Buy all their weapons.
Take out credit cards. Load up on debt.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And make sure to like their Facebook page as well.
Go to Ball State. Get a communications degree.
Pics in all black on the stuff.
Yeah.
Man, I'll tell you what. I've had a day, Greg.
Listen, Spangle always says how he's shocked that, you know, he's never been with somebody as much as long as he's been with me, and he's
exposed.
Shocked.
Consistent exposure.
How he's never tired of me,
Is that right?
Other than my wife. So
right.
I'll be honest. The first 2 years we podcasted together, I didn't think she was real.
Really?
That was when that linebacker for Notre Dame had a fake girlfriend.
And I
said, oh, there's Laneika Cal Spangle, because she would never be around.
That is
when
true.
We podcasted.
Well, she was going to beauty school at the time.
Oh, yeah. She was working like 9 jobs.
And God, I wish she had stayed there.
She should have got a PhD.
No, she's great. She's doing well.
Yeah, and we're great success story. You two have hashed it out and been civil and are an example of how those things should
work.
Is that
the body in the basement that I've
yes,
been
Yes, that's the smell. And then I got
Thanks,
a cat.
Tad.
I got a cat.
Yep, you cucked her.
Yep. Now, but no, second only on that list to my ex-wife is Kat Anagnos. She's an intern by day. She's an intern by night.
No, I'm a co-host by night now.
Night. That's right. Yeah.
And self-appointed.
The three best friends.
Oh, my God.
The gang's all here now. But
more of the greasy fingers on the shirt. Oh, yeah. Lay's doesn't leave any grease at all.
Yeah.
I'm good. Oh, no. You're going to ask for him back.
No, I'm done.
No.
No, you're not.
I'm watching my figure.
People are watching me right now.
I'm watching your figure.
Judging. You sound like Caitlin Kapetsky.
I know. Now, Kat, you and I, we spend a lot of time together, and I genuinely enjoy it. Do you?
Yes.
That wasn't convincing, was it, Greg?
I don't know. I think it was for Kat. She's, you know, it's hard to tell with her occasional awkward demeanor.
She's not good at sincere.
It makes her uncomfortable.
Oh, right. You want to
like you're really talented, Kat. Really talented. I'm so glad you're a co-host.
I'll tell you off air what really makes her uncomfortable. You want to see a full meltdown? Oh my God.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
You can get rustled?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Really?
I figured it out today.
Thank you for listening to We Are Libertarians.
Were you alluding to it in chat earlier when we discovered about your bi-curious phase?
Hey, I've got photos of you, mister.
Oh, you do. You do. I have very... my Facebook page is incriminating. Like, it's a hate crime.
We were for another project, we were going through your Facebook page today, and she was dying laughing.
Oh, yeah. Like, my Halloween... you know the Halloween costume party I have every year.
Oh, yeah.
Or I attend. But now it's not as much fun because people are too sensitive.
1 year, Greg went as a trash can of fetuses.
Victims of the liberal agenda. I bought corn syrup, red food dye, and a bunch of Cabbage Patch dolls at Walmart, and the woman just shook her head. And then a trash bag, and then gray cardboard paper, so she kind of knew it was coming.
And then
and I just wanted the top of a trash can, not the full thing.
Not the actual trash can that's on the inside.
Yeah, I made it out of a hula hoop, interestingly.
You wore an LL Cool J outfit.
Yeah, so I've been, twice I have been multicultural. And won awards for both of those.
Right.
What awards from who? David Duke?
Well, no, that's the thing is who can be the most offensive, and like no one would talk to me. Because the first time
you were in blackface.
The first time I went blackface, Alan Keyes. I was at a party in Bloomington, Indiana, which is basically like the Berkeley of the Midwest.
Yes.
And made the mistake of going to this, had a buck. I went through the drive thru at KFC in Mooresville, painted black with the with my Rastafarian wig on, and then I guess you could say my bling, because I had rings and chains and everything.
But in Mooresville, they didn't blink.
He was one of my brothers, and so
oh, no.
And so he gave me, and I go, I don't want anything in it. I just want the bucket. And then I had bought a Colt 45, and I won hands down. But one of those individuals came up to me because they had gone as Fudgems. Remember Fudgems from Domino's?
Define they.
Harry's brother.
Okay.
So this person doesn't know me, comes up to me, and he and his girlfriend give me the most hateful look I have ever seen. And I knew I ruined the party immediately. I mean, I wrecked it. And this is before 4 a.m. when the person who hosted it, their girlfriend, ended up leaving because me and my buddy that I had sent you a link to today. We had stapled the Confederate flag to the wood awning in front of their house and blared David Allen Coe and opened up all the windows at 4 a.m. in Bloomington. And his girlfriend left, hit my car, backed out of the driveway, and never spoke to me again.
How to win friends and influence people.
Hey, I won the award.
That's all that matters.
For Halloween this year, I won the award for, I went as Hillary Clinton and her demons.
I noticed.
And I wore a pantsuit. I wore a pantsuit and I dressed like Hillary Clinton. And then my friend wore a slutty devil costume with pieces of paper taped to her that said, like, Lewinsky dress, or Monica Lewinsky emails, the Clinton Foundation, like all of this stuff.
Right.
And it was hilarious.
That was, I though was like, is Kat a liberal? Like, when I saw that, I was a little like, oh, I don't even know if I like her anymore.
Why? It's...
I didn't know you.
But it's her demons, and it's like all of her scandals.
You were smiling and had the Hitler hail in the
picture. That wasn't a giveaway that I was one of
you. That isn't a demon.
No, she's the demon. I'm just Hillary Clinton.
I'm worried that people are going to start thinking that we're offensive.
We are highly offensive. We're waging the war of offensiveness.
I mean, this has been one for the record books.
It has. I'm
telling you.
Started off with the BBC and then now...
the BBD.
The liberal agenda.
I have to commend you. You didn't go with Big Black Cock, which is what Nice would tell us is one of the top trending...
It's true.
...Pornhub searches, which he keeps tabs on.
So tell us more about our day. I've blacked out.
So that happened. And
you really did, literally.
Waiting for Greg to show up to the podcast.
No, this has been going on for hours. Don't put it on me.
Okay, so for an hour... Maybe two, three, four.
Two.
At least.
Here's the thing. Okay, because of my love for Taylor Swift, I've, you know, talked about her music nonstop to Spangle, who I like. I like to share things that I love.
And the conspiracy theories
and
that surround her.
And the conspiracy theories, right. So I
the
shared it all with...
radical lesbianism.
Right.
Lesbianist. But I shared it with Spangle, and today, well, because last night he texted me... Well, actually, I got a text this morning, and it said... Actually, I'm going to pull this up. Do you remember this? This was hilarious.
I was just
infamous sleep texter, Chris Spangle.
I sleep text all the time. It's getting bad. Like, I'm going to have to start leaving my phone in the other room.
All right, so
it's getting in situations. I texted a girl something about 2 weeks ago, and it was she sent me this heartfelt message. And I replied, LOL, ha, ha, ha.
Best reply ever. Didn't mean that. Wrong person.
I tried cleaning it up the next day, and it didn't. Nothing worked.
You can't take back an LOL.
Nope.
You never can. Never. But Spangle, I told him, hey, why don't you listen to her newest album and just listen to the lyrics and tell me what you think? Because he's listened to it before. You liked
1989,
it.
1989, right?
Right. And so we did, and I get a text. At 8:58 a.m. this morning, and it said, I think Out of the Woods is one of the best relationship songs of all time. I really listened to the lyrics for the first time. I don't think I've ever heard a song that better captures what it's like in a relationship, ever. It begins by talking about
Who wrote this?
I did.
It begins by talking about the incredible joy of starting a relationship that fits and comes with the first few months of dating, with the insecurity of knowing...
Yeah. No.
Where did you copy that off of on the internet?
No. It's a full breakdown of the whole song.
He fully broke it down, and then that's when I knew we were meant to be. And so we sat down, and we watched. I showed him all of her newest music videos, and we analyzed all of them with the hidden messages. And then I showed him some of her older work with the really, like, when she was, like, a straight savage.
When she lived out of her car.
Oh, there's a song that she wrote about John Mayer that is one of the most savage things I've ever seen in my life.
She dated John Mayer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well,
he's
such a big age difference.
That's the problem.
Right. She was like 19, and he basically like, she's basically
John Mayer'd her.
Basically like, you fucking raped me, and like, dude, if you, we're gonna sit you down after the podcast and make you watch this video.
You need to.
No, and I will never do it. No. I will quit before I will do it.
What did I tell you afterwards? We were talking about the differences between you and I.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Spangle
There's
said
not many.
No.
Right, but except for Spangle said that if Greg would have been around, he would have killed himself.
Oh, absolutely. That's she is so vapid and like not deep and ridiculously bad.
Oh.
Greg or Spangle, tell him.
No, you're a co-host now. You handle it yourself.
Well,
he's considerate of other people's opinions, even if they're bad. I'm not. That's the big difference.
Well, I told him, I was like, hey, if you want me to stop, like, this is the fourth music video, you can tell me to stop. And he said,
wondering how far you'd autism out. And just letting you go.
I was letting her go.
Yeah, down the rabbit hole.
But he was... Okay.
Go to this Tumblr and read about... Here, check out this conspiracy theory. Alex Jones should have her on.
We hit Tumblr last week.
Yeah, that was last week. Come on, keep up with it.
I would say that on any given day, I hear about Taylor Swift for a solid hour. And
is
that
it is for real or is it an act?
Don't shake your head at me.
No, it's real. Like,
here's the thing.
Like, she feels about Taylor Swift the way you feel about Donald Trump. Although her feelings may be stronger because you...
Yeah,
because,
like, I can still criticize him. Yeah.
No, right. I can criticize her.
Really?
Yeah.
You were afraid that people showed up during our last podcast because you were talking negative and calling her a lesbian and feeding the gossip.
I said she was possibly bisexual, and
she had an Illuminati that like prevented people from speaking out against her on podcasts.
It's true. There's
in real
proof
time.
On the Tumblr, which I sent you, and clearly you didn't clearly you didn't review the show notes, but
oh yeah.
No. Here's the thing. Spangle took me to the Indianapolis 500 Speedway, and he showed me everything for 3 hours about IndyCar. And while I respected it,
very true.
But here's the thing. I genuinely enjoyed hearing how, you know, obsessed he was with it and hearing about one of his many passions.
He doesn't like reveal that ever. But you're almost moral levels of autism on the track.
He's bigger than I am, but yeah.
No one is close to moral.
Right. No.
But
Jeremiah has a
he transcends the track.
Right.
So here's
he's forcing people to love what he loves.
Yes.
And here's the thing. I'm just a genuinely curious person, and I like to learn about everything. So
yeah, she is.
Last week we were learning about, we were watching all the documentaries when I got woke, remember? Yeah. So it's, you know, Spangle's always like, so what are you really passionate about? And I'm like, well, I have a bunch of different interests. Until he found out
Taylor Swift
how much I love learning about
like
her.
3 or 4 weeks ago, we went to the gym. Like, she, you know, so she's
I was learning
been
about the gym. I was learning about health, fitness, cooking.
Fitness pizza in your mouth.
All right, well, what else were we learning about? All the Alex Jones conspiracy theories, the Kennedys.
Yeah, the Kennedy conspiracy.
Everything. So
did
now
you read through my notes on that?
Mm-hmm.
I put together like 15 pages on that.
Exactly. I could put together 15 pages of Taylor Swift. Well, and here's
full
here's
investigation.
Here's what's funny.
He has the documents.
I have the documents. I wrote them, but they're the documents.
See, and it's funny because I just have so many interests and I love learning about everything.
So well-rounded.
But, right, I'm just basically great. But when it comes to Taylor Swift, I don't know how much I'm freaking out about it until
what?
I look
how
at the clock
further
and it's
could you
4 hours.
Go?
No.
Like down the well.
Jeremiah level at the
but I mean, she's on like Tumblrs about conspiracy theories that she's a lesbian. Like, how much more is there to investigate on this iceberg?
Everything. You, Greg, pages and pages of notes.
Is she a lizard person?
There's a theory about that.
I'm telling you. You remember the Boston bombing and 4chan and Reddit after that?
Yeah.
Like, that's what Tumblr is for Taylor Swift.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm telling
you. I just didn't know if you were a content creator or a voyeur. There's a big difference your mental stability.
No, I've never created anything like that. I don't have the time or the capability.
I just enjoy it.
I just, here's the thing. Most of it I don't believe, but I like reading it. It's just entertaining to me.
Okay. That's fine. That's the way I feel about 4chan poll.
See, and I never create any of it, but I'm like, oh my God, this is crazy. These people, because here's the thing. I'd like to think I have a life enough to not sit down for hours combing through her flight logs. And
all evidence to the contrary.
No, literally.
Well, I read the other master posts about it.
Kat is genuinely one of the most curious people that I've ever met.
Thank you.
Like, not sexually. That's not what
I mean.
That's
why my friends call me Whiskers.
All of a sudden, I am not an intern here, and all of a sudden, this is just
the sexual harassment raining down from above.
Yikes.
At Weird.
At the end of the day, did you find yourself sucking a black penis on a Google right. search?
No, you didn't.
Tell me more about your bad day.
I've had a day.
Yeah, right, sorry.
No, but she's genuinely one of the most curious people I've ever met. She asks more, like, my little brother asks so many questions as a kid. And you know, like, that phase where, like, they get to 3 to 5 where they just start asking everything about the world?
And they already know the answer to most of it you've told them?
That's kind of where she's at in life, I think. And so she just asks a lot of questions.
It's not annoying, is it?
No, not to me. I think you'd drive him crazy.
No, I find it in small doses incredibly charming.
Yeah. So
and I think 2 hours a week's perfect.
And I think that if you've listened to the last few podcasts, like Crack.
Kidding.
Kat asks Greg. I meant Crag.
Crag. It's our couple name.
Yeah,
it's our couple name.
Oh, dear God. More grease.
Crag. Kat asks Greg a lot of questions. She asks us a lot of questions.
Mm-hmm. They're good questions, though. They're not crappy questions.
So we were talking last night, and don't go into everything we were talking about. Kat and I a lot of times talk about, like, really offensive things, because a lot of times you can't have conversations about really offensive concepts.
Right.
Without someone
getting mad.
Telling you
no one will go to the truth.
Exactly.
Like, we were talking about, like, this, I'm not going to say what, but, like, just the science of and the study of people. And it's
right.
Just psychology. It's just so interesting.
And
oh, yeah.
So she was asking, you know, like, do you think that these certain things, these certain music. Like, she asks a lot of questions about 50 years from now.
Yeah.
Like, do you think that things that we're experiencing now will be the same way in 50 years?
Like, that's a great question.
Yeah.
Thanks.
And you specifically asked about what?
Right. Oh, so we're just going to dive right in. Okay, well, here's my question.
Did we get through how bad of a day you had? Did we accurately frame
it? Before we did, I want to know, Spangle.
Yes.
After all of these stuff I told you about Taylor Swift, not only like her music and her lyrics and her life and the relationships, but about her business model, about her, all of that, what would you say?
I'd say that you're a really big fan.
So you don't think it was interesting?
No, it absolutely was. No.
She's more complex than people
anything
think.
Anything, if you really dig in, becomes interesting.
No.
It's
like,
just getting past that threshold.
Exactly. Like, I thought Taylor Swift was like kind of like Katy Perry, just kind of like a bubblehead pop star. But
JonBenet Ramsey.
Right.
JonBenet Ramsey, yes. In talking to Kat, Taylor Swift is a very complex individual who's lived like an interesting life, and she's like, her lyrics kind of represent all this stuff.
Oh, she's definitely an American success story. Like what her and her mom sacrificed to make it.
Yeah, exactly. So if you kind of like, if you, basically what Kat is doing, she's watching like a reality, a reality TV show of Taylor Swift's life,
mm-hmm.
and it's a really interesting life.
Almost like a full documentary.
Honestly, it is.
Some might say like the Truman Show, Jim Carrey.
She's very Kat's
just always watching.
So no, I found it really interesting, and I think her music is quality stuff. I always thought that. Like, when I had never listened to any Taylor Swift until Ryan Adams did a cover of the 1989 album, and I heard that, I was like, this is amazing. I wonder what the actual album's like. And I listened to it, I was like, this is really good.
Oh, yeah. She has a really good talent for writing catchy beats, which is the hardest part. Like, a lot of people can write lyrics,
and her
she's really good at just sort of knowing what's going to be a hit.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, so no, I had a great time today.
Good.
Kat and I intellectually are on the same level, and so it's very much like you and I, you know, like when you meet somebody that you're just like, hey, blah blah blah, you know. So it's always an interesting time.
Isn't it amazing how you know immediately?
Yeah.
Yeah. And just going back to the like just immediately clicking thing is, and just being curious, is that I liked her music, so I kind of like learned a bit about her. I was like, all right, she's just whatever. And then I was like, oh wow, she's complex, and more than she puts out. So that's why I asked Spangle. I was like, what do you think she's going to be like in 10 years? Is this going to be a beat? You know what I mean? So
all of our conversations stem from Taylor Swift.
Like, and about then, the music industry.
It's funny.
The Kennedy assassination.
Like, you know how the Matrix ended up like an entire boutique industry of like the philosophy and Tao of the Matrix? Like,
yeah.
This is kind of what's happening with Taylor Swift. She's going to be, well, like Beyonce has like transcended the human experience.
Exactly.
But she's
they all do. Like Lady Gaga.
Beyonce has become douchey, though. She's
They all do. Their sense of self-importance like takes them to a level where they think they're demigods.
Someone on the Facebook Live said, of course Chris and Kat get along. He's a cat person.
Nailed it. Who said that?
I didn't see who it was.
What was I going to say? Oh, yeah. So, great day. I'm sorry, but that was your payback for taking me to the Speedway.
I didn't know you hated the Speedway that
much. I didn't hate it.
She's too nice to ruin your parade.
No. Honestly, the exact same thing you said about me, I thought that the Speedway was just a bunch of cars going around. I didn't realize that it was
left turns at high speeds for 4 hours.
Exactly. Yeah. I didn't know it was so complex and the science behind the cars and so I feel like
engines and stuff.
There was a point about 8 hours into the day where I looked over and I just saw her like tired, and you just can tell, oh, okay, this girl's exhausted and she's had enough of this.
Oh,
he
was like, do you want to leave? And I was like, no, we can keep going.
No, you're having fun. Let's
no,
stay for
it wasn't
you.
That. She was, you must be a great actress because you genuinely sounded like you wanted to keep going.
I did. No, I was interested.
At 200 decibels, you can hide a lot of intonations that give it away.
Right.
No, it is fine. It's fine.
All right.
Exactly. But I was going to... Oh.
So where did your curiosity lead us?
Yeah, so last night I thought of this, and it kind of, you know, we messaged Greg. We're like, should we talk about this on the podcast? So my question is that you look in recent American history, I guess, how we have just been such a conservative country, you know, and it's no premarital sex, no, like, you know,
the Puritan emphasis from the, you know, the Mayflower still has lasted to this day.
Exactly.
You know, the Calvinist at work ethic and all of that.
And now you're seeing a very liberal society, and not just Democrats versus Republican. It is, like we've talked about, the social justice warriors of, there's 472 genders, and all of this.
There are two.
Well, that's
two scoops, two genders. Deal with it.
That's what they claim. But my question is,
don't, when you read Trump memes,
I know,
people think that you're saying that, Greg.
I know. I saw that was the greatest T-shirt I've ever seen. Two scoops, two genders, and then the glasses slid over his face. Deal with it.
But my question is, we're seeing such a, because if you think a lot of people argue that the baby boomers are what got Trump elected, and that's what took, we were progressing so far forward with the election and re-election of Barack Obama, and with the baby boomers, they took us back a few steps with Trump. Now, when the baby boomers die out, and my generation,
Lord willing,
and they're still around, and my generation is at the top, with the way we are now, you know, being, there's 72 genders, we should have, everything should be legalized, we want complete socialism, etc. Do you think by the time we're, you know, 70, 80 years old, do you think that marriage will be gone, religion will be gone, there's no gender, there's no free will, you know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah, what's the projection of what the current trends, like, kind of forecast?
Exactly, like,
where does this end, or is there an end, you know? Mm-hmm. Spangled, is that something you want to start with, or is that...
Yeah, go for it.
I'll tell you, that's really complex. For me, I do very much think that the baby boomers are white baby boomers are entirely responsible for Donald Trump's election.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And that's because historically, the baby boomers have led, like, the most awesome world experience that has shaped their entire view of the world, how they think, what the way they were raised, it was right. That's when America was great. Like, the very phrase, make America great again, is exactly the perfect thing to pitch to baby boomers who grew up in the perfect era to ever grow up in America.
Like, nuclear family.
Just kind of move the mic a little bit.
Yeah. And the reason I say that is, you know, their generation, the quote-unquote greatest generation, they defeated Nazism. And so that was sort of the last, like, ideology that was almost like a cancerous infection on the world. That was so, like, you know, American imperialism is real, but Nazism was clearly something radically different, like trying to perfect the human experience with eugenics.
Right.
And so they grew up, they defeated that. So America was united more than it ever had been. Germany was the only other major global industrial power and supplier for goods. So because the United States had this 20-year window, we had decimated Japan with two nuclear, you know, bombs. Germany, we had devastated their ability to do manufacturing. England was already crushed because we were so late into the war. So we were really the world's only supplier of major industrial goods. And that allowed all these baby boomers to remember their parents getting to work at union jobs, because they could be unions. There's no one else to buy from other than American producers, mm-hmm. and get paid ridiculous wages that they could negotiate and get all the benefits, gold-plated you know, health insurance that lasted on top of Medicare. And so they remember this era of, like, 1950s awesome, like, Greece Americanism.
Right.
And it was white. Yeah. And it was in a 2.5 kids, white picket fence, suburban family. And so that's what they were raised in. Then they start to get into, like, their 20s and 30s, and they come into their own and were very idealistic against, because of Vietnam and having to go. And they thought that was such a wrong, you know, just not the right thing to do. And they lost so many friends. That created, like, a sense of anti-elitist thought and, like, academic thought, and that, you know, they're these social planners that know best, and so we're going to revolt against them. And it even further cemented their distrust in government, which kind of led to Ronald Reagan's arrival after Jimmy Carter, where, you know, his phrase, the most dangerous or the most scary words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help. Mm-hmm. And so hating the government during the 70s because of Vietnam, 60s and 70s, turned into the 80s, where all of a sudden the world economy boomed again because of the economic policies. So they watched their retirements just skyrocket. Mm-hmm. Like, they watched the world economy grow. The 90s were fantastic because it was a relatively peaceful period, right as they were really hitting late adulthood, getting ready to plan for, like, their retirement and their twilight years. And so what we're seeing is, as they've started retiring, they recognize the society less and less because of all the, you know, the gender discussion and the cultural change that's happened.
Right.
And Donald Trump was just the ideal, his message and him being born the very first year of the baby boomers. Mm-hmm. And he just represents the ugly American. Mm-hmm.
Like, no one has more perfectly embodied what the ugly American is than Donald Trump. Like, exactly. he is our son of a bitch.
I remember saying when he first announced he was running for president that Donald Trump is the politician that American politics deserves. And in a lot of ways, I think that Donald Trump is American culture. He represents a significant amount of American culture, and that Donald Trump is... He is
brash.
He's
act
arrogant,
first, think later.
Arrogant. Isn't considerate of other people's feelings in a lot of ways. He in so many ways to me represents all the wrong things about American culture, and that's why I think so many of us react to him so negatively.
Yeah, I mean, there had been also too. He is the last of like that. The baby boomers idolize like John Wayne, like the Western cowboy, the rugged individualist that does it on his own. You know, they're his bootstraps and his bootstraps alone, and no one else helped him even earn a nickel at any point in their life.
Yeah,
none of that, of course, being true, but that's this narrative baby boomers grew up in, and so of course they want to go back to that era. They grew up, there wasn't a war, we beat everybody, their parents were earning great wages, they had the ideal experience, the institutions were strong because America was united, and then as they've watched this cultural change make it great again by going back rather than leading into the future, which is usually what most presidential politics is about, having a plan for where we're going to take it, like Barack Obama, yes we can, you know, looking out into that horizon, crafting the future. Trump totally rejected that. It's
he was
back.
One of the first.
And it worked. And it's because of the way where the baby boomers were born and all the circumstances that crafted white upper, you know, middle class, lower middle class and upper middle class baby boomers, what they experienced growing up because of the events surrounding it.
Yeah. I mean, culturally, yes. Economically, he represents a time when Make America Great Again, back when you were earning more money, when Muncie, a city that you live in to go to school, Kat, Muncie was in the 70s and 80s a thriving town.
Right. The ball jars. And
it's a ghost town now.
Hairy balls.
You know, you have so many Indiana towns. We lost almost 1 million jobs in a state of 6 million. We lost 780,000 jobs in the auto industry when it collapsed. And you're from
the RV industry.
Yeah,
the RV industry.
Barack Obama
discretionary
spoke.
Income killed the RV industry too. It created it because people would drive around and travel the country because they had discretionary income. Then when it reached a certain plateau in retirement, it was like, well, hell with that. I'm going to stay at a quaint B&B and fly first class.
Fast forward to now, where comedy clubs are closing for what reason?
Primarily because no one goes.
Nobody has discretionary income.
Yeah, it's just too tight. Like, any discretionary income is usually a result of credit, like taking on a little bit of debt.
And Americans are saving at a faster rate than they've ever saved in the last few decades.
First, they had to deleverage and pay off their debt from the crisis they accumulated. And now we're starting to see, like, just a bit of savings.
Right. So many of the comedy clubs, which is hurting the comedy industry, an industry I work in, like, people are not going to spend the $50 to $100 to go to a comedy club to see a show when they could just turn on Netflix and order a pizza for less than half that and watch a comedy special or one of their favorite shows.
Call up a random.
I'm thinking of married couples specifically.
Oh.
But single people love to spend their discretionary income for the most part. But even I spend most of my time house-sitting my own house.
You have a shitload of expensive equipment in here. I would want to watch over it too.
Well, I have cameras, so
yeah. For the record,
yeah.
And Kat won't leave, so it's kind of like having.
Right. I got the security dog.
Yeah. My security pet.
Yeah. Also, it's not. I've decided since I'm a co-host now, it's not the. It's not Spangle's apartment. It is the We're Libertarian compound.
The Southern Command.
All of a sudden, she's making decisions, Greg.
She
introduced the idea of redecorating the other day. She was like, I don't know if I like those bookshelves.
You said that?
I don't know if those bookshelves...
Check your privilege, hun.
If we got black bookshelves to match the curtains, it would look... Whatever. Continue. Baby boomers. Bad.
I'm totally joking, by the way. You don't have to get...
I know. Did you see the easel?
No, I didn't. Should
read it. I wrote this. Those listening at home.
Oh, hell yeah.
There's a little easel, chalkboard easel
on
the table.
Cafe.
Woke cafe. And it says menu, gay frogs, brisket, and tap water. I just thought that would be perfect for Greg.
Why is that?
Well, you like...
I only like frogs that aren't gay.
I was thinking you like brisket and tap water. Oh, I do. You're American.
I love brisket.
Well, you're American. You get the fluoride. Freedom. You get the fluoride in the tap water.
Damn right.
So yeah. I mean, if you go back, the economics of it are like in Elkhart. There was 28% unemployment in 2010-2011.
That was
crippling.
And Barack
Obama spoke at one of the high schools.
Yeah. Which one did he speak at? Elkhart.
Concord. High school. Yeah. Concord. It was. And I was young, but it was rough. I saw all of my friends, their parents who had good jobs, like just lose, gone.
Yeah.
And one of the unforeseen effects of that was, you know how, like, so most liberal economists say, yeah, these individuals are going to leave the workforce, but in time, if we do a stimulus package, they'll get rehired. Like,
right.
Because these firms then will have orders, the government will buy from these firms, and these people will go back to work. The problem that no one foresaw was that they were left the workforce at $33 an hour with a pension and with health benefits.
Right.
When they re-entered, they came in at like 12 to 14. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that 12 to 14 was spent on providing their own health insurance, which is now mandatory. So that just crippled discretionary income for any kind of entertainment or fun.
Yeah, I mean, and let's be honest about the healthcare. 20 million people aren't going to be uninsured. 20 million people are making a decision to buy a bad product that they were forced to buy that they didn't want in the first place, right?
Correct. Or it's a situation where the employer decides, since they're no longer subject to a fine if they don't provide it, they just aren't going to provide it, and you can go through an exchange.
Right.
Which you always could, like e-health insurance. You just, right. You know, it wasn't as heavily regulated with, oversight on what kind of plans you could and couldn't get.
So let's bring it back to the culture.
Yeah, where this things are question. Going. How do you see it changing?
So
let me ask you from your perspective. So that'd be interesting to me.
To reset kind of what she was asking is that, you know, you have the baby boomers who are conservative, and our generation is more liberal, and especially, you know, you look at the LGBT community's expansion of rights.
But keep in mind, baby boomers started out as like anti-disestablishmentarianism, like free love army,
right.
Tune in, tune out, or something drop out.
And so what Kat was saying is that you had the baby boomers start at a liberal place and now they're more conservative. Will the snowflake generation and not only us millennials, but the Gen Z, which follow directly behind Kat and 19 and younger.
96, yeah.
The echo millennials.
Right. So, I mean, what do you think? Do you think that generation, the people that you're in college with, will end up being more conservative?
I mean, here's the thing, and it's because, you know, I'm in a bubble of Ball State University, Muncie, Indiana, and I'm sure anybody on a college campus can feel like they're in a bubble. And that bubble is just not even Republican Democrat anymore. Like I said, it is just socialism, you know?
Is it like
Marxism.
So it's just full on Bernie Bros everywhere?
Not even Bernie Bros. Like they have problems with Bernie. Like they're, what is it, Karl Marx?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
They,
so they're Marxists.
They idolize this guy. And it's just, I personally, with the way the world is going now, the only people who are stopping my generation are the baby boomers. And when they die out, we're finally in charge and nobody's holding us back. I can just imagine the world like having no genders, no marriage, no religion. There's just
no institutions.
No institution.
She's worried of unfettered socialism and, you know, no power to stop it. And I said, I think that a large part of our society is libertarian, so they're not going to vote for socialism. We will become more polarized.
They are susceptible to that whole, it's the anti-corruptive corruption element of like that style of messaging that
right.
they're very susceptible to, even though they're fiscally conservative.
Yeah,
right.
So she's concerned about the gas getting stepped on the socialism. I mean, do you foresee a future where it is that?
Do I? I don't think it's a rapid acceleration, just because anytime I think that there was a brewing movement for democratic social European style welfare. Socialism,
mm-hmm.
you know, that has been around there forever, like Germany, France, the ideals of people like Bernie Sanders and the really hardcore progressives in America, that has been a brewing sentiment for quite some time.
Right.
And it's always in, like, the idea that Bernie Sanders is the champion of the working class when he's a 75-year-old Jew from Vermont, which has 91% people.
What does his religion have to do with it?
That isn't
Mein Führer.
You wouldn't know. I'm saying a Jewish man, 75 years old, born in the Bronx, like basically Larry David, but
right.
grumpier and not as funny, or unironically as funny. He is somebody who, I mean, he's a senator from a state that
is one of the wealthiest in the country.
Right.
Has like no poverty. And even though they didn't have hardly any poverty, they still couldn't make single payer healthcare work or their own exchange.
Right.
Like that was a $1 billion waste by the state of Vermont trying to experiment in the style of government he wants to force upon everybody in America. And the thing is, a lot of these places that these lifestyle idealism or idealist countries like Scandinavia, Denmark, Sweden, all those areas, they all are not, they have no ethnic diversity.
Right.
The United States is the most ethnically diverse right. country in the world.
For sure.
Period.
And if you, go ahead.
No, and that's the thing is that you talk to guys like Richard Spencer in ethnostates, they have no problem with socialism so long as it's for them.
Right.
They don't have a problem at all with, you know, Scandinavia and Sweden. That's why he goes over and speaks there, is right. because that identitarian movement, it isn't about fiscal discipline or you know, social planning for any other area except cultural preservation.
Right.
And so that is something where in the United States, it would just, the reason there's no gay marriage in California is because the black vote won't ever support it because they're the most homophobic. People always forget that. Mm. That's why it fails every time.
Really?
Prop 8 fails every single time because the African-American vote says, hashtag no homo. Oh, hell no.
Right.
Give me Chris Spangle. No. But I mean, so it's, we are so diverse. And there are so many different like subcultures that aren't indicative of this sort of loud, rabid, progressive rise. You know, the Bernie Bros, even more, like, of course, Bernie Bros, they don't want to be categorized. That's not nearly unique enough for the
right.
snowflakes.
Sure. Right. I'm different. If I hear one more person under 25, I'm different. I'm special. I'm just not like everybody else.
I'm just so random. I hate, I have something.
I'm so well-rounded. And, like, I don't really have, like, necessarily habits and interests. Like, I just am interested.
I just love Taylor Swift.
Yeah, except for this one weird obsession.
I'm just so well-read. I've read every book on the New York Times bestseller list.
My favorite book is Silence of the Lambs.
I own a typewriter.
I don't know how. I would be really interested to spend time just observing, like, just fading into the background and being on your campus and in seeing whether it is really as, because, like, in my head, the left, the American left, like, the militant new left is an abstraction, like, I don't really know too many that are actually like it. I just see people grabbing professors at Evergreen State or...
I'll show you some Facebook posts after this.
That's true. And, like, so I just, college is a poor sampling, or, you know, that's a sample bias, or a terrible sampling bias, because that's where you're there to learn and, like, experiment, and everyone takes these really irrational, hardcore fringe beliefs, and then...
Well, they
it's
change.
Like an incubator, and then but by the time you're a senior, you moderate usually, unless you're involved in student government or involved in a political organization. Traditionally, you moderate because you get so passionate. It's the first time you're ever learning about it, so you just jump full in, do a deep dive, and then you slowly sort of moderate and modulate back to the norm.
So will we see that when 10 years, 20 years down the line, when my generation is?
Our generation, you ageist.
You're not even close. Sorry.
I'm technically Gen X, Gen Z, because I was born in 96.
Yeah.
And the cutoff for millennials, 95. But
it's 95?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So it's even more millennial. Oh, yeah. She's definitely
There's no way that...
She wrote a song about Hitler in middle school. She's very millennial.
I have never had more letters pro for anything in
history
of the show. Everyone's like, keep Kat on. She's great. And I'm like, guys, I only had that one song. That's all I got.
She sung...
Mom, quit starting sock accounts and messaging Spangle.
I actually got it on Snapchat. I walked into the green room a couple days ago yesterday.
Hilarious.
And she's just singing the Hitler song to one of my coworkers.
And they thought it was hilarious.
It is hilarious.
Yeah.
It's great.
He's been rebranded.
But
the video is up on our YouTube channel if you want to sing. And it's so cute.
Called Tadoff Swiller.
It's cute when she sings it because she's just so bubbly and happy. So one of the funniest things Greg has ever said is Tadoff Swiftler.
There's a Tadoff Swiftler Tadoff Swiftler Twitter account, or there was, and it was just it was her superimposed within on Hitler with a little, you know, the mustache.
It's just
you found
it's,
that account.
Yeah.
Found my account?
I'm not saying that I might have the email it's attached to. I'm just saying it's out there.
Right.
It's so funny because she's just so bubbly and happy and like doesn't realize
I'm singing an educational song.
She hasn't gotten to Holocaust in history class, in Jewish history at Ball State.
Not quite yet.
So, So your question was what? Say that again.
Will the millennials become more conservative?
Well, they're definitely, we're seeing data that shows they're fiscally conservative because, and it's not for, but they're having some mass collective consciousness or enlightenment about, you know, the merits of fiscal discipline and like supply side economics or Austrian economics. Mm-hmm. It's because they feel like they're getting screwed because they're basically paying for the baby boomers and these generous benefits of the social welfare state, knowing full well it isn't going to be there because of the, I mean, if you look at the projections right now, we're talking about $100 trillion in unfunded outlays.
Mm-hmm.
The entire world economy, I would doubt, is even remotely close to $50 trillion.
Right.
So we're talking about $169 to $180 trillion in future benefits that are owed to people who aren't working, who have the money mm-hmm. because they saved their entire life.
Mm-hmm.
And to their credit, they also supported the people that came before them. They didn't have the option of opting out. And so what you end up seeing is when Social Security started after the New Deal, you had 32 to 1. 32 workers supported one retiree, mm-hmm. one person drawing social welfare insurance. Now it's down to, I think, 5 or 3.
I think it's 2.
It's probably now 2. Yeah, it's probably 2. And so eventually it'll be 1 to 1. And at that point, how long before there's a social revolution?
Right.
Especially when these people also have student loan debt. Because that's the other thing. Baby boomers didn't have it because most of them were able to take advantage of the GI Bill or their parents did, and that's what made them leap into the upper and middle class. Most people don't use the GI Bill that way, even though that's the best tool for social mobility to leave the lower classes. But most people's parents either paid for it or they expected them to pay for it or they just did what all their friends did and didn't work and then loaded up to the hilt with student loans. Saying, oh, well, I'll be rich. It's inevitable that I'll have a YouTube channel and be a millionaire. Because that's the number one thing kids in the Gen Z, that's what they want to be. Like for us, I don't remember like what I said when I was a kid, what I wanted to be.
I wanted to be president.
I mean, we were told each one of us was
going to be.
You're
almost there.
Thank you.
You're president of all libertarians.
That is true.
It's nothing
to sneeze
at.
Wait, you're something better than a president. You're the
dearest of all leaders.
That's damn right. That's real power.
Mm-hmm. Dearest of all leaders. The other thing that we are doing in America currently is creating a class system. And what's happening is because we are squeezing out the ability for millennials and Gen Z to be entrepreneurs and build their own wealth.
That's the killer.
Baby boomers won't leave the workforce. They're hoarding their money. Why won't they give me some of their money? Baby boomers are going to – essentially what happened is when you remove entrepreneurship from generations, you create class systems.
Mm-hmm.
Because what happens is new wealth isn't created. And
new opportunity.
New
opportunity
industry. Isn't created. And so what happens is that wealth just gets transferred
interfamilially.
Interfamilially. Thank you. And so you end up with a class system over time because that wealth isn't being distributed because new entrepreneurs aren't being created.
Though they can't because they have to service their debt they took on to go to college and learn. And that's the other thing, too, is the closest thing to a national religion in the United States, I've always said, is higher education.
Right.
Education's the answer, the be-all, end-all. You can never cut funding for it. You are un-American if you're, you know, say that maybe we shouldn't spend as much on education or maybe you shouldn't go to college. Like, you're a heretic.
Peter Thiel is absolutely scorched for saying that, hey, I'll give you $200,000 if you drop out of college and do a startup.
And then you can always go back because it's not like he says, you know, he says just take a sabbatical and if it doesn't work out, go back to Stanford.
Right.
Or fracking in North Dakota. Is that where it is?
Yeah.
Yeah. Those people out there getting paid so much money.
Yeah, and I mean that's a boom, and that kind of opportunity is what the baby boomers' parents were able to build their lives on, and it was a continued boom, and it lasted really until the one bad thing of Reaganomics was that, and this is kind of wonky, but at the end of the day, like once you take we had inflation under Jimmy Carter,
right?
And the thought was for John Keynes, like if you take economics, general theory, his quintessential book that defined most of the 1900s for economic thought. It was the idea that you could either have full employment and settle with high inflation, or you could have low inflation and low employment.
Right.
And what happened is that ended up failing because you had stagflation under Jimmy Carter, which really hit the baby boomers' parents a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But because they were savers and remembered their parents being in the Depression, they weathered the storm pretty well.
Right.
Now, to get out of
stagflation, what was necessary is the United States was slowing in productivity because Japan was all of a sudden a major industrial power. Germany had rebuilt. Europe had been able to. A lot of developing countries could do, you know, like Mexico could do mass production on demand. And so what ended up happening is money always flows to where labor is cheap.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to happen every single time. And in the United States, labor wasn't cheap anymore. But because of the stagflation, though, we had to encourage investment. And the only way to encourage investment is to tighten the money supply, which draws inflation out as well. But then the tax cuts were to gain productivity so people would work more.
Because
of all the union laws, people had gotten used to a shorter work week, not 40 years mandatory, OSHA requirements. And so what Laffer discovered is that if you cut it at the margin – where if you cut taxes where for each additional dollar you make, you get to keep more of it rather than less in a progressive system, you get a huge productivity surge. And that's what fueled the 1990s. All of a sudden, weak monetary policy flooded. The United States got flooded by Japan. There was even like a Japan worry of takeovers. They're buying all the real estate.
Well, watch the movie Gung Ho. It's a great movie.
Exactly. And so because we did that, it also meant all of a sudden that all the products that were manufactured in the United States – because our dollar was stronger, now was more expensive for the rest of the world to buy.
Right.
So it exacerbated the problem of hollowing out manufacturing.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you saw a lot of people just – really, you saw a lot of bankruptcy, and you saw a real estate boom is what it ultimately resulted in, a flood of real estate speculation that ended in Black Friday, the savings and loans crisis of the 1980s.
Right.
But like entrepreneurship is what fuels everything. And really, the United States is simply where we are right now and what our future looks like is where Japan just spent the last 20 years.
Yeah.
We are a carbon copy economically. We're sort of a zombie economy. Like, we'll have 1% growth, best, like, during booms that are probably irrationally exuberant, like the mortgage crisis, probably 2 to 3%. Then you'll have a recession, but we'll just sort of zombie along around 1% and stagnate.
So
unless all of a sudden entrepreneurship is just a whole new industry arrives.
Right. And that's really something that Trump was elected on is rebuild the notion that entrepreneurship exists. And I think that it will be a huge – I mean, I remember my dad growing up had the art of the deal, and my dad owned his own small business.
Just like you, assigned first edition.
Assigned first edition. And I really think that a lot of entrepreneurs and small business owners wanted to be Donald Trump in the 80s.
Oh, he was Gordon Gekko, but in real life.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so
do you know who that is?
Is it a lizard?
It's Michael Douglas in the movie Wall Street with Charlie Sheen.
We'll show it to you and get you woke.
The Wolf of Wall Street?
No.
No, but so you've seen that?
No. It's inappropriate.
She's a sheltered kid. She was driving 55 on the interstate. She won't.
I was following him, and I was going like 70.
She
did
was.
You? Oh, so okay.
She would not go over 55 because her dad told her not to.
Yeah. What's wrong with that? I respect my parents, and I'm a millennial.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
You're not a millennial. Don't you dare self-identify as one of us.
Then I'm a. I don't know what I am.
You're
a millennial.
I know you're 1 year outside of it. You're a Gen Z.
So, the
Z-er.
Greg and Chris.
So much for the nap.
Yeah. Oh, she chokes me out all the time. Yeah. No, not like in a dirty way.
Not in a Google search way.
No. She fake,
not in I just sucked a black dick way.
Yeah. She fake choked me the other day. So we were standing here, and she goes, "Shut up!" And she like tried to choke me, and had her hand around my neck.
And then you put his, and we were
so,
like,
"So I jokingly did it back to her." And we look out, and my neighbor's looking in the window as we're choking each other out like a couple of domestic violence patients.
Want to run for governor?
This was last Thursday before
God,
the show.
It was so funny,
so insignificant in the life of Chris and Kat that we
the daily ongoings.
Some of our coworkers are ready to kill us.
Why?
Because there's constant laughing. We're always in there. Like,
the number of inside
jokes.
We're
having fun. We're doing work. And
are you at that level where you don't even need to communicate? You can just with a look.
Oh yeah.
And
yeah.
You both know.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
This is how we communicate. Beep bop. Nanu nanu.
That's racist.
No, actually, what that was.
The Tootsies would be so offended.
Actually, what that was a slam poetry bit.
Uh-oh.
Beep bop. Nanu nanu. What does that mean? Millennials glued to our phones. Whispers.
America!
America!
What is that from?
I just made it up. It was some slam poetry about how Spangle and I communicate with texting because we're millennials and we don't know how to communicate face to face.
It's awkward, so we just look down and then text each other sitting in each other's presence.
Right. Hey, you up?
Sharing memes.
Yeah, no.
Telling you would take so much time, I'll just send you this meme.
Some of our coworkers are also getting very paranoid about the fact that they think we're talking about them when we're in the same room.
Yeah, I would go ahead and bet that is totally unjustified.
Wow. I'm a child of God.
Yes, we love Jesus.
But from now on, a new bit we're going to have on this show. Look at me just creating everything.
Crafting content.
Get rid of the
Moving on up.
Forget about the autism. I'm going to have a slam poetry session.
Are you?
Yeah. Sorry.
She calls the policy and philosophy portion, the politics of the show, everything after the first 20 minutes, exclusively it's autism. It's just how we started referring to it.
Yeah, it's so funny. Like, with the straight face, if you heard us talking, like, at the grocery store, we're like, yeah, so then Greg will do the autism, and then I don't know if I have much contribution to the autism, but, I mean, the autism is just great, and everyone's like,
Well, it's gone mainstream because I was listening to POTUS Politics last week and some New Yorker reporter was like, you know, and it got a little autistic there in the middle. And I was like,
that's us.
It's catching on.
It is. It really is. I mean,
spreading.
It honestly is.
I caught
your autism, but for Taylor Swift.
It's contagious.
Yeah.
I know. And it's endearing. We love our artistic friends. Asperger's friends.
I think, though, we definitely talk about it in a more in-depth and comprehensive perspective than you're going to get. And we're also way less partisan. So we'll look at the full spectrum, if you will.
Jokes.
Yeah. Of the topic from all sides. And the cultural change, don't you think? I'm a big proponent that everything is a cycle. Like, so it's a wave. It ebbs and flows.
Yeah.
And so all this cultural Marxism is what I would call it, because that's what it really is. It's the trying to completely eliminate any type of institution that exists for which people are beholden and not open to, like, the best thinking of the elites in academia.
Yeah.
Which is really kind of where we are.
Well, you look at the early, you know, you look at Teddy Roosevelt and the election of 1912, Eugene Debs, you had a very socialistic worldview at work.
Jack Reed left the United States to go live in Russia to go through the experiment with Lenin.
Yeah, I mean, you had Woodrow Wilson get elected, and then you get to the 20s, and you have Calvin Coolidge.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then you go to FDR.
Do no harm, president.
Exactly. And then you go to Eisenhower, and then you go to Kennedy, who was fairly conservative, but then you end up with...
Today, Kennedy would be the most radical... He would be called a libertarian because of his civil rights support, his non-interventionism, and then his extreme tax cutting.
And also that whole bit about the secret society speech.
Yeah.
The full Alex Jones speech.
The truth.
Yeah. He's full.
I will bash them smash them into a million pieces and just, you know, throw them into the wind.
On the way to work the other day, I was
quoting Alex Jones.
She went to a... I saw Chloe the other day, and so she stayed with Chloe, and then I picked her up on the way to work. And on the way,
is so kind; he provides transportation.
And so we were we were talking about something. She was talking about Taylor Swift, and then I go, "Oh, that's where Bobby Kennedy spoke. Have you ever heard the speech?" And then I like 6 minutes of Bobby Kennedy speaking after King got assassinated. She's like, "I don't know if you were actually fascinated or if you were just like, this is fascinating."
Well, no, I was. It was cool.
Well, you should. Because, I mean, Bobby Kennedy is Roman Catholic. And so he specifically asked a replacement for the CIA after Dulles if the CIA or any of the deep state had any role in killing his brother.
Mm.
And he asked him in a way only if they lie, they go immediately to hell, they believe.
Really?
And so that's specifically why he asked him that way on a private line.
Interesting.
And did he answer?
The rest of the files will come out this year. It's eligible to be released.
Ooh, we're going to get so...
Let's have a launch party. We'll live stream.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
The review.
So
we can sit here and just weaponize autism, JFK.
You know, and then you had... So you have these waves, and right now we're in a more liberal wave where you have a Nixon who... You go from an LBJ president who did the Great Society in, like, an Obama to a more liberal president who's a Nixon. And then eventually that'll swing back more to a conservative president like a Reagan.
Nixon was a lot like FDR. Like, he was very much a social planner. We already know what the best minds think. This is what we're going to do. Don't worry about it, you little people.
So we will swing back, but I do fear that the lack of entrepreneurship in... There is still entrepreneurship in the millennial generation.
It's YouTube.
It's just... Yeah, it's in the internet
industry. But it's not industry creating.
But it's... Well, I mean, you could argue that the internet is...
Oh, that's an industry that's really... sort of matured. I mean, there aren't going to be a ton of
Facebook.
There's going to be huge drivers of job growth because, like, we know that all new net job creation in the United States comes from companies that are under the age of 5. So every single net job added comes from a company that was under the age of 5, and it isn't small business. That's a misconception. It has nothing to do with, like, your small businessman that starts up a one-man shop and is really self-employed but has an LLC.
Right.
All job creation comes from high-potential firms that get massive investment and are under the age of 5 and then take, like Facebook, like Tesla, like SpaceX, these companies that are very, very young but then scaled up and are rapid growth companies. But the internet was an infrastructure play, and none of the productivity gains came.
Right.
So really, you're looking at, did it have an effect? Yes, huge effect. But on productivity, nothing's changed because it's so damn complicated to use.
Right.
All the productivity gains people thought we would experience didn't arrive.
The hairy price.
And now we're even more distracted.
Yeah.
That's the other reason.
Yeah. And I would
say it hasn't made doing jobs easier.
Entrepreneurship also breeds more conservative outlooks and fiscally and socially.
Our friend that went and got accredited and tried to get a sign out in front of her establishment.
Oh yeah.
She just went, took the class, spent the money, was going to put up a class, then realized she needed a permit. She is hardcore anarchist after one experience about trying to get a permit.
This is an esthetician who runs her own small
shop.
Business. Do it. She
it's self employment. Really,
she rents a chair. She's part of the gig economy essentially, and she cannot. She is just sitting here going, the amount of bullshit that I have to go through with the city, the state, the federal government, the taxes, the permits, all this is outrageous.
The accreditation.
I'm barely making any money, and then I want to put a sign out to advertise. And she can't.
It's a crime. Or a civil, violates a civil ordinance.
And so somebody who was not political is now like, what's the download for We Are Libertarians?
Yeah.
What's the website? How do
I give me some Spooner.
Right. I want some Murray Rothbard, please.
Damn right. We've got to burn down the government.
Right. She's watching V for Vendetta right now.
Damn right. So woke.
Yeah. So I got to tell you, what?
Nothing.
What?
Just keep talking.
Also, in the last segment, that chewing that you heard was cat eating
I was
chips.
Chewing off of the camera.
Sorta. I heard it.
Oh, that's embarrassing. Hey! Tell me what this looks like.
That's her fidget spinner.
That's a vagina.
I didn't even mean to make
sure
that.
Sure did make a vagina.
I was just stretching the
What's
body.
That say about your subconscious?
It's...
I've been outed.
If you want to know what your heart truly wants, watch Where It Wanders.
Why did I just make a big black dick?
Why did I search that just out of the blue?
What impact do you think the gig economy makes on society moving forward and productivity? How big is the gig economy?
I think a lot of. I mean, that's a tough thing to say too, because at the end of the day, people are going to need. You're going to need to plan for retirement at a certain point.
Right.
The gig economy doesn't lend itself well to that. You know, baby boomers and then their parents had it so lucky in that, they had defined benefits. They worked at a place. Their company had to, contribute because of the union negotiation. It was there without much headache putting much headache or planning in. Now, everything in the gig economy is on the individual.
Right.
And while libertarians would say that's awesome, there's also the likelihood that it appears to be happening is that no one's planning.
Mm-hmm.
And then that doesn't mean, though, you don't get a Great Depression situation where no one planned, no one has anything available. At the end of the day, the government's going to step in and intervene in that 100% of the time, every time, because people don't want to watch suffering.
And then you end up with a universal basic income.
Bingo.
Which is a lot of what the tech people in San Francisco are saying. Like, listen, AI and robotics are going to put a lot of people out of work.
What happens when human labor is inefficient?
Right.
Why would you encourage inefficient labor and productivity?
Right.
Because, the more productive you can make things, that's where we get our lifestyle gains. That's why someone today who is classified as in deep poverty in the United States has an iPhone. Mm-hmm. It's that productivity allowed, the ability to do mass production, global supply chains, has given them a quality of life from the productivity gains so much higher than the best kings from even, you know, 50 years ago.
Right.
As far as trends, though, I don't see us turning into a society of snowflakes. Do you?
I think it's, I see it because that's
the, they're that bad.
90%
of, because Ball State's a conservative campus considered, like, oh, from a perspective of the rest of
right,
the sure, know, colleges in the United States.
No, it's 95% of the people I'm around are like that. And so that's what makes me.
And you're in Greek life, which is way less radical liberal
all
traditionally
right,
than.
We'll give it 80%.
No, but I'm saying, like, that's saying something, because in Greek life, people are way more traditional. Like, they love institutions, clearly. So, like, they're usually way more conservative than the rest of the hardcore radicals.
Well, and the interesting thing is that I think it kind of goes back to society is things are shifting. There are a lot of, usually, you know, there's sororities, fraternities for specifically black people, for Asians, for Hispanics, whatever.
Segregated Greek housing.
Right, right. Now it's changing. There's a, there are in, like, we have a girl, we have a few girls in our sorority who are actual lesbians, and there's a ton of gay guys in chapters that you know 20 years ago that wouldn't be a thing, and they're loved just the same. So I think it's just a societal thing now,
that more cultural acceptance of alternative lifestyles.
Exactly. And so me seeing these,
that's shocking. So a lot of fraternities are totally cool with it.
Yeah,
because I had a gay fraternity brother and he wouldn't have dared.
Really?
Dared
what?
To come out of the closet then.
Oh, no.
Really?
I mean, there's a few chapters who are...
Well, you were also in Texas.
Right.
Right.
At the most conservative school in the state.
Then again, right. I'm in Indiana, like, you know.
Right. In Muncie.
In Muncie, but...
Funcie.
There are
home,
a couple...
Home of the hangings back in the 20s.
Yeah. Ooh.
No, but there are a lot of chapters that have open or out people. Yeah.
Yeah. And, yeah, I mean...
And it's...
Interesting. Like, and that's great. I also, though, because, like, a lot of times we define ourselves through the roles we have, right? So, like, in Greek life, it's, well, I'm Greek, or I'm, you know, an alpha.
Mm-hmm.
What are you?
I don't want to say I'm...
Alpha Omega Mu.
Well, they already promoted you singing your Hitler song on Twitter.
It's true.
We're so proud. They clearly didn't watch the clip.
They did not watch the clip.
We're so proud of our sister that just...
The one time I was validated, we were not taking this away from me.
I know, like, oh, what a thing to be validated for.
No, AOPI.
AOPI, that's right, AOPI. So, Alpha Omicron Pi. Like, you guys clearly have a set of, like, assumed roles that people already can sort of get the gist, or they project on you before ever even meeting you. Like,
yeah,
you have a stereotype, I'm
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, for sure.
Everyone does.
Yeah.
I can't imagine institutions getting to the point where they're so sort of...
open.
Or, yeah, they're so undefined and so transient, and you know they don't have a stereotype. It would be shocking to me if that was something that were to arrive, because the human experience is finding the roles that you're comfortable with the people you're comfortable with, and
finding patterns and like
exactly
likeness.
Discovering right. patterns and then discovering what you like, and so much social acceptance. Almost entirely in the United States is based upon employment, mm-hmm. whereas though like during college and your formative years, it's very much around like the social activities.
Right.
And so in all of those carry with them further definitions. And so I can't see all of a sudden there being this just entire dismissal of individual identity, which we, you know, kind of craft for ourselves.
Well, like I said, one of my first episodes on is now a lot of sororities are accepting trans people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, you know, it's just opening the door for just the breaking down of the
yeah. Any type of you know, clearly defined distinction.
Is just going away.
Gone.
And I'm not saying that's good or bad, but I'm just saying, what is the world going to look like when...
How does that continue on?
Because you think of traditional American life, not even traditional American life, but we'll take it a step further to, or step backwards to human life. I learned about this in my sociology classes. You know, humans like to have, you know, they have to have a home. They have to have family to reproduce. They have to have some kind of work.
Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Right.
Yeah. And you have to have, a lot of times they need a sense of spiritual /
yeah, once you satisfy lower needs.
Emotional, like, so that's why humans have created religion.
Right.
That's
why Marx said, you know, did God create man or did man create God?
Exactly. And so that...
Oh, deep, Marx.
Deep,
you
deep.
Got him.
Wizard.
Harry Potter? No. But with that, it's like, is it going to go... Like, how far can we go if we, you know, either get rid of religion because it's, you know, not accepting of every kind of person or...
A barbarous relic.
Exactly. So you get rid of religion, you get rid of marriage because, you know, why should we only be bound to one person?
I don't foresee marriage because that is that is an economic institution and always has been.
And they're preaching that, so I'm thinking, will they change it? Because already, look on TV, there's TV shows about, I think the name's funny, thruples, like... Three.
That's the term?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a group of three, thruple. Like, man, like dad, mom, mom. Like, or dad, dad, mom, or
but
whatever.
One of them is losing out on property rights because they don't have legal standing.
Interesting.
You know, in the event of a split, they wouldn't have legal standing right. That the actual sanctioned spouse would.
With our economic system now, but it's like, will it adapt to, we'll have no religion, we'll have... socialism, everything, no institutions anymore, and there's a way to combat that.
I think we'll have institutions. They just will avoid any type of stereotype or any type of anything that can be negatively that'll be a negative reflection of this group and this societal trend.
Maybe if we had the Ministry of Truth, you know, and we had the Ministry of War or Peace. You know, and
that would be an idea. How about instead of a secretary of war, have a secretary of peace?
Telescreen in their house that monitored everything. You know,
a smart home like Elon Musk is pitching.
Right.
Like 1984. I'm reading 1984 right now, and man, does everybody need to go read Orwell? Animal Farm, yes, but 1984 especially.
Talk about accurate social commentary.
The Orwell, man, what a genius that guy was. And
I don't think we're that far. You know.
No, you still have a lot of freedom in America. You still have the ability to choose what you want to do. You have in the United States government a lot of nudges.
Right. But, that's the rising trend.
Right. Nudges, but, you know, like marriage, because the three of us are not married, we have 1,100 less tax breaks than a married listener.
Oh, right.
Has. And so we have a lot of nudges, but in reality, you have the freedom. Where do you want to eat? What store do you want to go shop at? What
gives my life meaning, and what am I going to pursue?
What path do I want to choose? What do I want to read? What, you know, if you want to start an outlet that tells people a different point of view, start a podcast called We Are Libertarians, you can. And nobody's standing outside the door. We have a lot of freedom in America, and a lot of times we lose sight of that.
Completely. We become obsessed about the slightest infringement.
Yes.
Or perceived infringement.
But good. We should.
We should.
Absolutely.
Which I think speaks to sort of our innate characteristics. Because I very much believe that, like, imprinted on the American soul because of our revolutionary mythology, which is true, but I mean, I'm saying that's sort of our creation myth, is that, you know, to hell with the taxes King George wants to levy.
Right.
Even though we would have been better off taking those very small levies, we're going to do it on our own, even if it's tougher. That's just something imprinted upon the spirit and then passed down as a behavior or like a mass identity.
But
like,
do you think it's being passed down to my generation?
I don't know. Is it everything? Not? Like, what do you remember about the revolution?
Like,
what were you taught?
Which revolution?
The American.
Oh.
The which revolution?
Well, the
all
French
of history
revolution.
Began on July 4, 1776.
Exactly.
Everything before that was a mistake.
Come on now. Well, we learned that we left England or Great Britain, whatever, because they were telling us what to do and we wanted all kinds of freedoms, including religious freedom. And we
that isn't why. Religious freedom is why the pilgrims came on the Mayflower, you know.
Right.
That's religious freedom. So we revolted over taxation.
Oh, yeah, like the Boston Tea Party.
And the Stamp Act.
Oh, yeah. So they were basically...
They made shitty tea and they wanted us to use it.
Right. They were teabagging
us. We make the best tea. Everybody tells us we are the best teabaggers.
Well, essentially what happened is the Crown was raising money and they passed the
like
tea
ridiculous
act,
taxes.
And then they sent the tea over here and said, pay up. And they were like, we don't want this tea. Mm-hmm. You can't force us to take this tea.
And they were, you know, that's... So what we've learned is... Okay, yeah, I was getting that confused. But what we learned was...
No, I mean, and that's totally... Like, I get it. Because I would imagine that you are purposely not taught it because, like, people in our generation don't know it well. And I don't know how our history teachers would have any idea how to tell it correctly.
Right. And about the Boston Tea Party is Great Britain was taxing us a ridiculous amount and telling us what to do and pushing us around, and they had their soldiers living in our houses, and that's what I don't remember.
The Third Amendment was about.
Fourth Amendment.
Is the one that nobody talks about because that's
the quartering,
the Quartering Act.
Because like if a soldier came, right.
Yeah, the general writ.
Right.
So, so yeah, that's what we learned about, and that's why we revolted against
rebellion.
Rebelled
because we didn't have representation. Did they teach you though that we actually had a option, like so, a agreement was brokered that would have been less financially, less of an imposition financially from a form of taxation, but we wouldn't receive representation, and so we would have been better off economically, like all the merchant class would have, had we taken it and stayed with the Great Britain, or Great Britain was really the British Empire,
and we would have ended probably up like Canada.
Their secretary or their head of state is still the Queen.
Yeah.
To this day, the Queen of England is the head of state. Our Secretary of State, their version, is the Queen of England in Canada.
They still have to get permission from the Queen to do certain things.
We offered them statehood, and they rejected it. That's why I hate Canadians.
Yep. There's 98% of them live on the border, Greg.
That's right.
What are they up to?
Wait, do they really?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. You missed the early years of Wall. We had this. We hated Canadians.
Well, because who would, if you think about it, who would live all the way up north, like with the Eskimos and...
Right.
Who would reject American statehood? Look at Puerto Rico. They would do anything for statehood.
They would do anything, including send us Joe Ruiz and Aria Torres.
That's true.
Right.
Well, we learned in one of my classes about how we always talk about mass immigration is, you know, the southern border. But apparently, we learned in class, a lot of Canadian women flood to the country when they're pregnant to give birth here.
Oh, yeah, anchor babies.
And then they go back.
Right. Every time.
Because it's better here. I guess it's cheaper.
That's Ted Cruz.
Really?
Rafael Theodore Cruz.
Wow. Interesting. Mm-hmm.
Lion Ted.
He's the Zodiac Killer.
He is the Zodiac Killer, and his dad killed JFK.
He did.
Right.
Donald Trump told me. God Emperor told me.
That is... Every time I get sad, I think about Donald Trump as president, and
it's
so
the best
funny.
Day ever, immediately.
You're fake news. I just watched that clip of him in that first press conference and laughed.
He began his first press conference as president of the United States after not doing one for months and read a list of all he had accomplished in his short tenure and how he was the most productive president thus far in history, then proceeded to do a press conference.
Did you see
the balls that takes?
The tweet today?
To who?
Brzezinski?
Oh, yeah. She was bleeding. She had a facelift, and it was disgusting. She was bleeding all over the place.
Let me read.
After he offered to officiate their wedding.
Let me read the tweet. Hopefully he didn't delete it, because it's so funny. So Donald Trump tweeted today, "I heard poorly rated Morning Joe speaks badly of me. Don't watch anymore." "Then how come low IQ crazy Mika, along with psycho Joe, came to Mar-a-Lago 3 nights in a row around New Year's Eve and insisted on joining me? She was bleeding badly from a facelift."
I have never seen a woman swoon harder over a man than Mika Brzezinski to Donald Trump.
I said no. Are you kidding? Really?
There's a video. Look it up. Mika Brzezinski, Donald Trump, YouTube video. And he like picks her up when he's going on to do a morning interview during the campaign.
Oh, he and Joe were great friends. And, you know,
That's the thing, is people just can't handle it that it's... They've known him personally on an individual basis for so long, and they're like, holy shit. Like, it's so funny to watch how many people have disavowed him that had personal relationships with him.
Trump?
Mm-hmm. Wow. To me, I mean, if you think about it, you're talking about, like, Joe Scarborough, you know, former congressman from Pennsylvania, at the time a rising Republican rock star, host of Morning Joe on MSNBC, getting married to Mika Brzezinski, and these people have loved Trump, are members at his Mar-a-Lago resort, pay like $125,000 just to join, and have been lifelong, you know, acquainted with him for a lifetime. And all of a sudden, he just becomes president, and it is outright disavowal, like he's going to ruin America. And like that's a shocking turn of events,
but,
for someone that you've known for so long.
But is it because I'm telling you now the persecution people feel, fear?
Yeah,
just being on a college campus. I mean,
they thought Trump was Hitler.
Yeah, if you say you're a Republican, you're
Yeah, you tell people you're a libertarian,
so get beat up. No, I'm a libertarian now. The three best friends, the three best friends, the gang's all here.
Oh, boy. But, this is a lot to take in. So I didn't realize this was so, like, it's very real. It was surreal when you announced. Now I'm very much, like, dealing with the realities of this new arrangement.
It's kind of like Trump's election,
I kind of feel like this is an infiltration.
I know.
I weaseled my way in. And
I feel like the Greeks have, like, slowly, you know.
We're enslaved for thousands a year. We're on vacation.
So how much Greek history do you know?
How
Greek is your family?
Very Greek. My dad is a first generation American.
Is he really?
Yeah. Both my grandparents were born and raised in Greece and then moved when they were like 25.
Immigrated here?
Yep. Immigrated here. Got married.
What brought him here?
Well, my long story short, but I think it was to flee the aftermath of World War II.
Mm-hmm.
But my grandfather's uncle was the first to come to America, and he meant to go to Chicago, came through Ellis Island, meant to go to Chicago, ran out of money halfway through, ended up in Elkhart, Indiana.
No kidding.
Which, if you look at a map, it's
right on the way.
Right on the way.
What is that, US 41 or something like that?
Yeah. And so he just started up in the RV industry, and then my grandpa.
He had no money.
He ran out, but he thought he would have
enough.
And
was he married?
Nope. Single guy.
Runs out of money. Yep. No social welfare states, no benefits that he was allowed
Starts
to use
Starts working,
yet.
Grunt, shining shoes.
Does what you
that.
Would think, like, oh, I'll find a way to support myself.
And ends up owning his own pool tables store. Billiard store. And then my grandpa comes along when he's 20, I don't remember how old he was, 20-something. Starts working there, works his way up, becomes the owner.
Grows it further.
And now my grandpa, my uncles, my dad, they have a bar, a restaurant, the billiard store still, and my dad has his own business. So it's really the American dream.
It really is. I mean, and that was what the story of America was. You know, the story of America isn't, like, clearly, for my people, it wasn't so great. You whiteys kind of ruined things for us.
Right, right.
You know, took our land.
Well, and it's interesting.
You gave us casinos, okay?
Oh, I know.
And free college, if you can prove it.
You gave us casinos, and you gave us, you know, these camps. These chain link fenced camps in Oklahoma. Thanks. Really appreciate it. I want to go to Tulsa on my chain link fence property.
Kat and I were talking yesterday about how much we loved summer camp.
Oh, yeah.
We gave you a summer camp.
Yeah, constant camp with a stipend.
The thanks we get.
Yeah. Diabetes and alcoholism as well.
No, but my grandma, her and her sisters moved to Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And then she was like, oh, I'm looking for a husband. And my grandpa told his uncle, I want a wife. So they got, it's kind of an arranged marriage, but
which usually now it's showing last end up, you know,
they're still
being
married
able to stand
to
it.
This
yeah,
day.
Like
still
they
married.
Last longer than
oh yeah
voluntary choice, which is pretty, something really interesting in that.
Very interesting. And they're still married today, over 50 years. And so she moved to the U.S. They got married and had my dad and then my two uncles. And they were here for so long, they became U.S. citizens.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting.
Fully naturalized.
Yeah, fully naturalized. U.S. citizens, they vote all the time, everything. And my uncles, it was funny, my grandpa told my grandma when they got here, I'll work, I'll take care of everything, you just stay here and, you know, cook, clean, whatever.
Sexist.
Not splitting the duties.
Well, but here's what he said.
No, 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 that's patriarchy.
No, but what he said was,
if she doesn't want to do it.
Right, and he said, you don't need to worry about finding a job. I'll do it. You don't need to worry about getting your driver's license because it's difficult. We don't really know English. I'll do it. So we did it all, and my grandma was like, well, I'm really bored. So she got a job at a tailor. She started tailoring. Seamstress. And she got her driver's license.
Heck yeah.
So I'm like, way to go, Yaya.
What's she do? Her name's Yaya?
Well, that's grandma in Greek.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yaya and Agnes.
Mm-hmm, Yaya and Agnes. And now they've lived in their house so long, they own it. Got their own businesses, and
they are, you know, very much what that embodies, what, you know, the American experience. But I tell you what, like, that isn't even one, our immigration rates are so low now, obviously, especially post, you know, post Trump,
right?
But there, that isn't the American dream, isn't anymore to, like, start your own Main Street storefront,
sure.
Have your son, you know, raise your sons to turn it into, build it up and turn it into a franchise or, you know, a conglomerate and then sell out or whatever. Now, we were valuing some really long things. Like Gen Z, their number one response for what do you want to be when you grow up is famous. That's the number, not astronaut, not entrepreneur, not doctor.
Literally just thinking of myself.
Literally yikes. Looking at herself.
Hitting a little close to home.
No, I'm looking. Ooh, I'm comfortable.
How many views are, I'm going to change my response if we don't have enough views. That's what she's calculating right now. But I mean, that's a really stunning trend because it has always been a career, a productive like contribution from like a productive member of society. What values added by fame by a celebrity?
You know,
and what does that say about that? Like, what is that? What does that turn into?
I think part of it is our generation's lazy, and they see the rich. And here's what it is: I grew up with TVs like MTV Cribs mm-hmm. and Keeping Up with the Kardashians right when it first started, and you see these lavish, ridiculous lifestyles,
McMansions.
You see the way these people live, and it's like, well, I want that. And so some people do.
And what did it take for Kim Kardashian to get it?
Fame is a business model. Like it very absolutely. Much like Donald Trump, he turned his name like because he pulled off a couple. He rebuilt Manhattan when no one else. It was all porn shops and dilapidated. But because of that, he was able to turn his last name into a licensed premium brand people would pay terrible terms, like extortionary amounts per royalties and per fee sales stipend back to him. Just to be able to say that it's a Trump brand.
Yeah.
And now that he's president, that is only going to exponentially increase.
Well, and I've long said that as I've kind of grown up and as I've started working and doing consulting on the side, like I'll do small business or medium-sized business.
We had a tech guy that was – he called you when I was – we were going out of duel. That guy that I was on with is like, that's local celebrity. Is that local celebrity Chris Spangle?
Yeah, the unofficial mayor of Indianapolis.
Yeah.
He just said that?
Swear to God. And put it in tweets and stuff.
Yeah. I didn't see
local celebrity Chris Spangle.
That's hilarious. No, like, as I've gone around doing some consulting, like, you realize how full of bullshit. Please don't do that. How full of bullshit the entire world is. Like, how fragile the entire economy is and how it is just all bullshit. Okay.
I'm sorry. That was a really good thought.
Cat,
keep going with it.
Cat and I are fidgety.
She needs a fidget spinner.
So we have this fidget putty. You get it at Target, and it's Crazy Aaron's thinking putty. And she just made a ladle and then poured water into it and drank out of it.
Because I'm a curious person, and I wanted to know if it would hold or would go through.
It kind of did.
It literally held.
How about you be curious about what I'm saying there?
I am. Sorry.
All right.
So your point was that it's all based on bullshit. You can build a business, but it won't employ a lot of people. Because the Trump Organization, from an employment perspective, is very small.
So when we talk to friends that work in corporate work, think of how many people don't actually do very much there. And they pretend to be busy. They make up reasons that they're necessary.
That's why we've had no productivity gains in 40 years.
Exactly right. Because people are just all bullshitting about their actual productivity to their bosses to keep their phony baloney jobs. And what happens when everybody figures out that all of this economy is just a sham?
Well, I think we're already there because I posted an article in the newsroom. There's actually a brand new study on entrepreneurship in the United States. Are you fidgeting over there?
Yeah. She just tried to put the fidget putty over the microphone. She just made a fidget putty condom.
It's a necklace.
Put it over your head and see if air can get in.
Hey, curiosity is going to kill the
kill
cat.
Kill the cat. Okay? But the three best friends. We're the three best friends.
Oh, God.
The gang.
Are you really an ENFP?
Yeah. Can't you tell?
Are you?
I'm one.
I'm an
brother.
ENFP. I'm an God. ENFJ.
You can't tell that I'm an ENFP?
I didn't know
the really annoying one.
The Gen Z version in the female form. That's what's
the three
was
best
tough
friends.
To decide.
The three best friends.
You really need to watch the actual full show on YouTube because just watch it because it's so funny to watch Kat as she's doing things during the show. Like last week she was raking. Then at one point, like Jeff and I, you were making a great point. Jeff and I started sword fighting with back scratchers.
Right.
But Kat just does nothing but fidget the whole time.
Yeah,
unless she's talking.
I am down here. I'm like,
she's listening. She's paying attention.
Oh, I know.
I can't
She's
pay
just
attention.
An active listener.
Yeah, right. It's my Gen Z-ness.
Yeah. But so.
Please stop showing us your Gen Z-ness.
So, like, when you grew up, did you want to be an entertainer immediately, day one?
No. I grew up, I wanted to be a teacher.
Did you really? Because your mom was?
Another government leech.
Yeah.
Private school.
Well,
Greek school.
Greek school, right.
Right.
No, I wanted to be a teacher because it was the only thing I knew. Mm-hmm. I knew my
okay,
dad.
Yeah, that's normal.
Worked in small business, and my mom was a teacher, well, professor, I guess, and I just loved being in school so much. Like,
did you really?
Yeah, like growing up, I did.
You liked school?
Fucking nerd.
Until I didn't like learning, but I.
Well, you also had like a broadcast program at your high school, which is bullshit.
Yeah, that
like,
was.
You
great.
Had news, like daily news.
Well, yeah, I did the news every day. Well, okay,
like a Channel One in house.
Oh, I know.
Ridiculous.
Good morning,
so
and welcome to News Scene.
So did we? I helped start it at Plainfield.
Yeah, but then you guys fucking ruined it because you hacked it and started saying obscene things over it, and no one else got to use it again. Then you killed a turtle, and we didn't go to the zoo. And then you all jumped in the pool for your senior prank, and so the pool shut down my senior year.
All of that is true.
Yeah.
No, but I genuinely enjoyed elementary school because I loved it. You had centers, like you did art for 5 minutes, and then did music for 5 minutes,
like workstations.
Yeah, and it was just productive and active, and I loved it. And then middle school.
That's interesting, huh? That's so much different than what we had.
See, well, and that's the thing is, I remember middle and high school was very sit down in the desk, you know,
structured,
writing,
wrote,
structured,
memorization,
and. But in elementary school, when we did the structured stuff, it was good. But it was, and I didn't go to like a hippie school. I went to just a public school.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, I think it just was a great school. But just the centers, the different styles of learning. But then again, that's when, because I was in kindergarten, I think 2001,
mm-hmm.
right?
Oh my God!
I know, and.
Wait, hold on. I blacked out there for a minute.
I know.
Did you say you were in kindergarten in 2001?
Yeah, like 9/11 happened then.
You mean?
I know.
The year I was a senior?
Junior.
All right. Well, anyways.
No, that's sorry. That is just such like a... That just hit to the...
That's a kick in the dick, isn't it?
I feel like I'm ready to enroll on Medicare.
Well, Grandpa didn't want to say anything. No, that was a fake laugh. But,
he was making fun of you.
I know. Mean. But
you should do some research on self-abortion.
Oh, well, honestly...
Late term.
Silly putty.
Yeah, there we go.
Libertarianism.
Really seal it.
No, but I think it was because in the 2000s, that's when I noticed you didn't learn the traditional ways to add and divide.
Yeah.
It was all the new... Let's think outside the box. Let's do creative things. Let's sit in beanbag chairs.
Because you have to have like a basic rote memorization and like skills to operate from, like a basic platform everyone needs.
Right, but
then you kind of like are set free.
Right, but here's what I kind of notice is I think the reason my age group is so, I want to be an entertainer. I want to do something creative all day, and I'm to blame too. I want to do all these things is because we grew up, we did the structure, like structured stuff in school was boring. That was boring sit down work. That nobody wanted to do.
Tedious
and awful. But then when it came to the creative stuff, you know, we were still learning about geography or other languages or art by being active, but it was more fun. And so that's...
So is that sort of when it switched over for you from wanting to be a teacher to wanting to be a podcaster and intern at a comedy radio show?
No, it was high school when all of
you got on the news?
No, honestly, it was high school when I went from sitting in these desks and getting yelled at for slouching and, you know, having to pay attention and take notes and do all this stuff. And learning in an awful way to me,
right.
Personally. Learning in the traditional way, which I'm not good at.
Well, so like our education system, like the one I grew up in, is actually, it was modeled after the Soviet Union's.
Really?
And so it was designed for basically assembly line production of
mm-hmm.
Compliant citizens.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's like you experienced like the last remnants of that Soviet model of education.
And it changed halfway.
Assembly line, yeah. And so then you got to the part where it was like more Montessori, where it was a little bit
self-guided. Yeah, I went to Montessori preschool.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that makes perfect sense why you are the way you are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just kind of like drift like a gypsy, like in and
basically,
out of things that you're
interested
in.
I've got my van outside. But I think it's interesting that, you know, for the education system is that I think now, even though those Montessori schools are still around, are here, and we're trying to be more creative and stuff, how I was looked down upon by my peers and my teachers because I couldn't learn in the traditional...
You were ADHD.
I'm stupid. Because I couldn't learn in the traditional setting.
Well, you couldn't retain information because you weren't focused on it.
Exactly. You know, I had to... Fidgeting, nowadays it's cool. Back then, they would yell at
me. Now they have spinners.
Send me out in the hall. Now they got spinners. No, but when it came to my like broadcasting news classes, I got straight A's. I was in like 7, so advanced.
Because you're interested in it.
Because I was interested, and because I was doing things. You know, my art classes I was decent in. My gym my English classes where we got to go outside and reenact stuff was great.
I was exactly the same way. Were you that way, Greg, or were you like a well-rounded student?
So I had an interesting experience. Like, so my dad was a professor and like very much an academic elitist.
Okay.
Great, amazing, wonderful people, but very much an academic elitist. And my sister was like the rock star growing up.
Of course.
She just didn't like, she, you know, everyone goes through that rebellious phase. And then I saw how
I was always
a B-plus student. Like, and then was super involved in sports, like every sport, every season, all the time.
Right.
Or like activities, like my mom was the head of youth group, so I was always at that. Because I grew up in the church, right? As you were coming in, I was like, I've served my time. I'm a pole.
Yeah, gotta leave.
Yeah.
Spangles here.
I've done 17 years. There's a new youth minister. It's time for me to segue out.
Like, which is hilarious because...
He would have been my guy.
Jim would have been your guy.
And he still was. Like, we liked each other. He's like, you don't want to come? And I'm like... Jim, I swear to God, if you had to go through VeggieTales like I did and go through, you know, DC Rocks, Our God is an Awesome God. And all
Our God is an awesome God.
It was like my generation speaking in tongues concerts.
I still talk to Jim this day. Jim was like a former drug addict.
Oh, yeah. He went to Washington High School, was like a star defensive end.
Christian screamo band. Like, yeah. He had an earring. Some
performing
of the
actor
had,
now in Chicago, right?
Yeah, he is. He's a great
guy.
He
smoked and drank and hit it all.
Oh, we found out last night that we both went to the same church camp, Epworth Forest.
Yeah,
and
I was confirmed there. I didn't go for the camp
up in North Webster Lake in Indiana, up in Kosciusko County, and
North Webster.
Yeah,
there. I know North Webster. There's something Webster, Indiana. The Stimulator, the strip club's there. It's right on Lake Chapman by Lake Chapman, Lake Orange.
Well, this
went to a strip club there, a bachelor party there last. We almost sunk a boat 2 summers ago. It was a great time.
So this is Epworth Forest, and they have a big plaster Jesus, and then they have a fountain right across from it. And
she was confirmed, and you went each summer?
I went each summer.
But you went like 16, 17, 18?
Yes.
Okay.
And so Zach Pingleton.
Hell of a great guy.
Great guy. He went and pooped in a fountain. And later that night, the big prank there was to put dish soap in it so it would get all bubbly. And all the Christian kids were like, hee, hee, hee. And like, little did they know Pickle had pissed and shit in the fountain
yep.
hours before. And like, him and Jim were just watching it laugh.
Howling.
Laughing to death. And like...
And keep in mind, like, so that's when you were coming in. When
right.
I was leaving that same year.
You had Johnny Strange.
And it was like an act of heresy. If you liked laser tag because it was violent, or like, you know, it was
right.
very much everybody hold hands. Give me your testimony, man. I want to hear your testimony.
Yeah.
Tell me how pure your faith is, man.
Right.
Let's go to Asbury and I'll be youth ministers and
right.
be like quasi John Mayers.
Right. No, you had Johnny's a great guy, but yeah.
Wonderful. Love him.
That youth program held no. I was an atheist at the time, so it held no like.
And I've been an iconoclast my whole life, so
yeah.
like sitting through that. Was like watching performance art, and I'm like, none of this is impacting me.
I don't think
God is petty, so I don't think this is at all what I need to be doing.
We're at church. We're at Epworth one summer, and I get a phone call from my then high school girlfriend. She had jacked me off, and then had fingered herself, and thought she had gotten herself pregnant. And so I'm at church camp every night praying.
Why are you slouching?
Praying to the Lord that I'm not going to have a child at 17. And like,
you thought you could.
We didn't know.
Didn't you take health with Mr. Teeny?
Yeah, but I didn't pay attention.
Thank you for listening to We Are Libertarian.
Penis, vagina, vagina, vagina.
I was giggling the whole time. And so I was just like, hee, hee, hee. And so...
Let's pray.
And so I'm like talking to Jim about it. We're laying in and like he's in a bed, and like I went in there.
Laying in bed with your youth.
He was like taking a nap, and then... Because
most of the time.
We had bunk beds. And so I'm like sitting on the edge of the bed having this serious conversation with him about this. And then out of the top bunk flies Pickle. Pingleton just starts humping the shit out of me.
And at church camp with the youth minister.
Right next to us in bed laughing his ass off.
While you think you're a father.
From jacking each other off.
It was known as the immaculate hand job.
So stupid.
But.
I forget what we were even talking about.
All right, thanks for listening to We Are Libertarian.
No, it's not time to end because...
Damn it.
You were confirmed, you were saved, okay? Not everybody's as lucky as you can.
Yeah.
They don't get to spend eternity.
The three best friends were the three best friends. We're all Methodist now.
You're big on this group thing. I'm a libertarian. I'm individual. I'm unique.
Right.
Don't get your... The cultural trends are interesting, though, because a lot of them were planned. Like, if you read what the Frankfurt School at in Germany's plans were, like, so these trends, the gender, the family, breakdown of the family,
right?
The really the elimination of any like distinct clarifications. Why don't you chug that? Chug, 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 chug.
Come on.
I'm totally kidding.
It's are a pop, by the way.
It's a pop.
It's a pap.
It's a pap with my pillow in the Midwest. Yeah. That was like a weird Midwest rap I just made.
Are you from Northern Indiana?
Yeah. Literally, weird. Yes.
Yeah. You want some blueberries?
Ow. Would you like some Amish crack?
Yeah, some lemon cake.
If you don't bring us Amish crack to the party or to the podcast next week, you're in trouble.
I'll bring it to the podcast.
All right.
But yeah, so like all these things that you're seeing happen, you think are rising organically, right?
Right.
Like, you think it's just societal progress that you're... Gen Z is deciding at this point that they've just had enough of the old ways, and so this is sort of the natural culmination of backwards thinking,
right?
Traditional Christian conservative thinking, right? That's, you know, had a iron grip on society,
and it's right. Not.
It isn't. It was planned.
So it's copycat.
So the Frankfurt School. So Karl Marx. You know who that is?
Yeah.
Who is he? Tell me more about the religious freedom the George Washington wanted. In your creative history.
Why are you being so mean to me? No, I'm kidding. Well, I just...
the family.
Yeah. Woo, the three best friends.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't pick on you. No, it's not your fault that your teachers neglected.
I'm fucking stupid.
You should go back to elementary school and demand they
be
do
like,
it right.
Give me my finger paint back.
I want the Alex Jones version.
If you're not watching the full show on YouTube, when she sings the three best friends song, she reaches and grabs both of us on the shoulder and rocks us.
What was I going to say? No, only thing I know about Marx is literally from everything that every crazy socialist kid I follow is that he is God.
Mm-hmm.
He, everything that he's written about the economy, about people should be, it works, but for some reason, because it works so well and it is the best, we're not doing it.
Yeah. And so with Marx, he, historical determinism, the thought that history is something, the arc of history has a known destination. Communism is inevitable. Capitalism will fall away. Mm-hmm. So that's, everything, like, and so Marx wrote about the communist. He didn't really clearly define what it would look like when it arose. And if you don't quit laughing, I swear to God.
I don't know why I keep
laughing. You just started giggling. You looked over at me, and you were thinking something dirty, honestly.
No, I was not.
And then you looked at me, and I caught your eye, and then you started giggling.
I'm seriously listening. Like,
I feel like one of your Bob and Tom coworkers. This passive aggression.
He named the day job.
Yeah, oh, yeah, edit that out.
That's fine.
No, it's on his Facebook. So. No, but go on. I really am listening.
But so the idea was that we were marching towards a known destination, that mm-hmm. it was right. all inevitable. Marx clearly, he was the first to sort of discover it and say, this is how it works. It's sort of the existing status quo synthesis, and then we challenge it, and then it slowly moderates, and eventually we arrive there.
Right.
Now, what happened is, so like Vladimir Lenin and Joseph Stalin, mm-hmm. so they ended up...
Great
so
guys.
Actually, Vladimir Lenin wasn't that bad a guy. It was that... He believed in Marx's historical determinism so much that it's like the upper middle class engineers in Germany who just could choose to selectively dismiss the Holocaust because, well, it's for the greater good. They thought they were marching toward progress,
right?
Which is the same thing that happened in with Lenin. And so the idea was that eventually you could get all of humanity, all the years of like me being an American, you being Greek, you being.
White, pink.
I was going to say Canadian, but
I'm
he
German.
Gets offended.
I'm
That's
German.
True. You being Bavarian, yep. right? You being Bavarian. So all of this didn't matter. All that mattered was the workers versus the rich people,
right?
And so the Soviet Union was an experiment in all of the working class people defining themselves as workers rather than like nations with mm-hmm. a national identity, and they'd revolt against the rich. And then we'd have communism. Mm-hmm. That failed miserably because what they found is that, like, do you know who Che Guevara is? Have you seen a Che t-shirt? You know Fidel Castro?
Yeah.
Heard him? So is Che Guevara was like the intellectual, he was a doctor. He mm-hmm. Rode a motorcycle all throughout South America, going and helping people that he blamed the rich for creating all this poverty, and he would treat them free of cost like a gypsy. Okay. That's why I wondered if you knew him. But so he thought So he and the Soviet Union, it was this experiment to unite workers. It failed because they could never get people to stop viewing themselves as their country, their tribe, their family first. It never, that never washed away. So then you got the Frankfurt School. Mm-hmm. After that failed, they came up with the idea, well, we'll just undermine all of the institutions in society by an endlessly harping on it over and over and over, and progress towards no genders, towards, you know, basically toward communal rearing of children, like Geraldine Greer back in the first wave of feminism.
Right.
Advocating these radical ideas, knowing full well it wouldn't be adopted, but it would push and push and push and push until it had, they'd gotten very close to what they were trying to achieve.
Right.
And so that is where this idea came from. Is so because Lenin and the Soviet Union failed as a way to arrive at communism, what we got was the Frankfurt School, who then the University of Columbia put in their, where in Harlem, where they put their philosophy department, political science, sociology, all a bunch of former Frankfurt School professors mm-hmm. after World War II. And that is why they have, like the Northeast and Timothy Leary and these individuals, they have just continually pushed for these societal ideas, and all ideas start in academia and then filter down.
Yeah.
And what we're, you're seeing is what you thought is just all of these things happening organically mm-hmm. by people critically thinking, well, why do we have genders?
Right.
Is actually top down autocratic decision that was made 60 years ago, 70 Absolutely. Years ago, in order to get to communism, Marxism. That's why it's called cultural Marxism. Rather than economic Marxism, they're going to do it by culture.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, really, in reality, you have a lack of social shame around certain speech. And so instead of passing a law to limit speech, you get shame is used to keep, to tailor your speech.
You know where the term racist comes from?
Where?
Vladimir Lenin.
Really?
Lenin coined it in his essay on socialism as a way to make bourgeoisie beliefs disgusting, gross, cultural preservative. So he coined the term racist. Huh. I put it in our group chat, his essay, and it would be a way of social shame that they would use to antagonize and influence any belief they didn't like. They would label you a racist.
Right.
And this goes all the way, this is over 100 years old.
Right. So
that's the term racist was designed, it didn't arise organically. It was selected to shame people.
Sure. So I tweeted out last night, if any of my future wives want a wedding hashtag, I am calling it off.
That was brilliant.
Thank you. Well,
it was great.
Holly took exception to it.
And who?
Some person that I knew long ago in politics that I thought I was cool with, but apparently she doesn't like me.
After reading your Twitter today, I doubt it's something you really have to worry about.
And then so I just replied,
sick burn.
I said, sorry for being a truth teller.
Uh-oh. A soothsayer.
To which she replied, it's that you misinterpret your sexist ignorance for charm. If it weren't so sad, it would be cute. With, like, a gif of someone going, aw. So I just replied with Trump. Trump making
can't go wrong.
So, did you?
Oh, yeah.
One, though, was so benign.
And then,
you should have called her fake news.
You should have used that new SpongeBob meme that was like,
do you use SpongeBob memes?
You know,
I've never watched it. I've never watched a single SpongeBob.
We got something to do tonight.
Jason replied, mangled by Spangle. Hashtag mangled by Spangle.
Doolittle did?
No, somebody different. But, like, that's an instance where I was. Do I think that I'm going to have multiple wives? And if my wife wanted,
well, you're on pace, so that's inaccurate.
Right. And if my wife wanted to have a hashtag, what do I really care? Like,
that's the thing. Like, every wedding I've been to over the last three summers, like last hurrah for the Shah, or you know, don't be long, or like stuff like that. Every single bride has had a hashtag.
I just think it's kind of
and then got married at Mavericks.
Right.
The honeymoon.
Just like the new gender reveal with the babies.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-mm. Cake cutting. Mm-mm.
Yeah, I just think it's hokey and silly, and I don't like puns, and it just is, it's so overdone, and it was interesting and cute like 2 years ago. Now everybody's doing it, and they're not very clever. No. And so it just annoys me, and so like, I don't really care that much, but like, I'm a sexist now. And so like, that's a very clear indication of like, no. You must, your speech, conform to these,
public opinion is how they shame.
Exactly.
And it's, they don't try anything legally anymore.
Right.
It's like Paula Deen.
Right.
They destroyed her career in the press rather than actually ever taking the time to ask what was said or doing a real investigation.
And so they crush someone's industry. Martha Stewart, same thing. Like, they just, everything is tried in public opinion with the left, because then they don't have to worry about facts and, you know, providing an evidentiary hearing, any of the real formalities of actual justice.
If there's a book called So You've Been Publicly Shamed, and it follows the woman who flew from America to South Africa, or from England to South Africa, and made the joke about, you know, how she isn't going to get AIDS because she's white, and she's like a socialistic type sympathizer. And was making a joke, you know, mocking people who believe that way. But the internet took it because of Gawker.
Yep.
Took it and...
And then turned her into hate speech. Yeah.
And by the way...
That's our fate, by the way. I hope you're okay with that.
Yeah.
Like, I invite hate speech.
My career hasn't started and it's already over.
Yeah. Well, I think we're ahead of the trend. And by the time we really arrive, we're going to be, you know, it'll be all coming together at the right time.
We'll be... You know, we're going to be in the Steven Crowder world, in the Milo world. We're thoughtful. Yes.
They're just tar and feather.
See, and that's the thing. I disagree, because the people that I'm with, like these young generation kids, when by the time everyone else dies out and we're at the top, we're not going to stand for that.
There's Newton's law, every action has an equal and opposite reaction. Mm-hmm. And since societies are organic living things, anytime there is a consistent push, like Trump is in very many ways the right fist in the face of every Portland hipster that has been crying about gender for the last 30 years and telling white people they're to blame. You know, my whole premise of why I thought Trump was going to rewrite the industrial Midwest on the electoral map was because eventually white people, white men specifically, get tired of being told they're the reason to blame.
That you're racist.
And so it's like, well, now we got this guy.
How about that? I don't know Holly, and I don't. I mean, I've met her a few times, and we've interacted on Twitter, and somebody that I respect. But she doesn't really know me. But I'm sexist because of a joke. Like, and if anybody really knew me, they know how. I love women. Nobody loves women more than me, right, Kat?
You would be the best woman's president in the history of the United States.
No, I think I'm...
No, you are way more accommodating and thoughtful about sexist type of language than I am. You are way more sensitive to, like,
than
you know,
most people.
Sexism than...
Right.
Hardly any libertarian.
Right. And so I don't, that's why I'm like, she doesn't know me, I don't care. You know, but this is the world that we're living in. A single tweet is going to ruin someone. It can ruin your career, you know? So it's...
And is this the start, or is this how it's going to be forever?
I think it's how it is forever. I just think that's... Buckle up. That's how it is.
Yeah. I think it isn't.
And that's the cost of freedom. Like, that's... We have freedom of information, total freedom of speech on the internet. And the thing about systems that allow freedom of speech... Like, when books were started to be printed, when newspapers were started to be printed, when you had telephones, and then radio, and then television, and cable. And every time that the ability to expand human communication...
Democratize knowledge.
...exists, it exposes the best and the worst of humanity. Mm-hmm. And so everybody blames the technology, like, are our cell phones, or is Twitter making us this way or that way? It's like, no, that's how humans are already. We're just seeing it in a more clear-cut, defined way, and that's a good thing. We should have the full appreciation of how human beings work and how society works and the consequences to, you know, but you better have a thick skin. I mean, it's...
You have to have... The real problem is that very few people have a sound foundation of, like, knowledge or truth or really, a moral philosophy.
Well, truth doesn't, I mean, in the postmodern world, truth doesn't
exist. Or post-truth
really
society, like President Obama said, you know, where everything is both true and false at the same time.
Sure.
And that's the best, I mean, he is a brilliant social commentator, the president, very thoughtful. And that is just so, the post-truth society, that could not be a more accurate description. We live in a world where everything is at simultaneously both fact and not true at all.
Yeah.
The same fact.
What is true to your mom, Kat, is... not true to your college friends. Mm-hmm. And it,
right.
But it's truth to both sides. and false on the other side.
And even accepting the truth and the actual, like, empirical stated facts, what's happened in our society, if a Democrat accepts the facts submitted by someone that they oppose, that is an act of treason.
Mm-hmm.
You can't even have a middle ground discussion, because even conceding that these are the facts we're going to debate is an act of hostility against your own.
Absolutely. Global warming's a great example of it.
Perfect. You can't...
It's the new world religion.
Oh, yeah. It's eco-religion.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know?
And by even stating... I don't know. Not all this... I mean, I watched...
If Al Gore were right, we'd be underwater right now.
If I watched Rick Perry give... I listened to the audio of Rick Perry give his press conference.
Killed it, by the way. He looked like a president.
Right. He did great. And he basically was asked, do you believe that in global...
Man-made
climate change. And he said... yes, I believe that climate change is real, and yes, that I think man has some does contribute to it in some way.
That'd be like saying a huge variable had no impact,
right?
Which is ridiculous.
Which, for a conservative, that is a big statement out of Rick Perry's mouth,
and he'll get crap for it, and they'll probably try to hold him accountable by some pack.
You know what? You know what? The headlines were in another portion of the press conference. He said that not all the science is settled. And so that's...
It never is.
That's what they used. And so they made him look like he's a climate change denier.
Yeah.
Like, and they made him look ridiculous. And this is why Trump's elected.
Yeah, like, because everyone's stupid. And that's the thing, though, is you and I, like, let's even say... Or, like, let's... Like, Kat wanted to have their political union at Ball State have a debate. And Kat wanted to represent the libertarian perspective and talk about marriage.
Right.
Gay marriage with a Democrat or a liberal. She's on that side. She doesn't, as a libertarian, she has, do whatever makes you happy. It doesn't affect me.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But she were to then continue on and say, but as far as actually administering marriage, I don't believe that we should use tax dollars that are forcibly taken from other people in order to create a bureau that, you know, issues licenses to citizens, because I think that is force, and so I don't support the state being involved in marriage.
Right.
She would be tarred and feathered as anti-gay marriage, mm-hmm, by the snowflake, you know, caucus.
Right.
Well, it's just like Phil Robertson, from one of the Duck Dynasty guys, who gave that big, you know, the interviewer was asking him his thoughts on gay marriage, and he said, you know, oh, I don't... Basically, what happened was everyone was publicly shaming him. Oh, my God, they're so homophobic. They don't believe in gay marriage. But what they didn't, you know, they just pulled that soundbite. What they didn't hear was the rest of the interview where he said, but I'm a Christian and you have to love everybody, treat everyone with respect.
Yeah, he fully, like, you know, expounds upon why that statement, he believes that statement. Like, he gives it the necessary nuance so it doesn't sound like just a moron.
Exactly. And, of course, nobody cared.
No, we don't have time. Like, it's a soundbite society.
And you hear what you
want to hear. Bumper stickers aren't long enough anymore, or too long anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a 140-character world for news and digesting information.
So my next question is that I've been listening to a podcast, and one of the podcasts that I listened to, they had a transgendered YouTuber as a guest. And this YouTuber, I forget the name, but she is hated because...
Lauren Southern?
No, it's Blair White, I think.
Blair White.
Yeah, transgender, and has a YouTube channel where all they talk about how, you know, why Black Lives Matter is a scam. Why transgendered people need thicker skin. Why this. And if you listen to her, of course, that's like, you're crazy, you're sick, how could you believe that, you're trans.
Where's your empathy? Where's your humanity?
Because they're trans, so they have to be for it. Just like, you know, and the default
is that anything
stuff.
Other than they, if you oppose the default of the victim, then yeah, you're Hitler.
Well, right. And, you know, a lot of... They were saying on the podcast, the people were like, yeah, you know, we're liberal and you make a lot of good points. And one of the points she made was... Because they said, you know, trans people have been around. You look in the history books, you know, they've been around. It's a new thing. It's science. You know, it's not a new thing.
No. And there's the Danish girl. There was a movie about it, like, in Europe. God, 150 years ago. And, like...
I forget what the movie was.
Yeah, forget the actor.
Just out. Yeah.
So, and they said, why is it now that everyone is saying that, oh, I'm not necessarily transgender, but, oh, I'm a I'm a gender fluid, queer,
non-binary,
blah 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 blah.
It's
and
all just fluid.
These 14-year-olds and this controversial YouTuber said it's because this is 2017. When did all this start? Would you say
trans? Like the ability to perform the surgery?
No. Like the saying, I'm non-binary, I'm gender.
Oh, within the last 10 years?
Within the last 10 years, they
easily.
Said.
It first showed up like at Berkeley and like more of the, like the Kenyon College in Ohio, like the really hardcore radical
schools.
It's
become a meme in the last year or two.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So they
mainstream.
Said,
yeah.
Okay. So they said, she said that 2015 was the year that emo kids died. That the emo gothic phase is gone. So that she said, you know, 27. It's a good quote. She said, 2017. The emos are out. The trannies are here.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, it's another. She said, and she's trans herself. And she was like, yes, I'm trans. I have the psychological whatever. Blah 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 blah. But these, you know, 12, 13, 14-year-old kids who I meet at my meet and greets who say, oh, I'm non-binary. This I'm they them z's or whatever. And she's just like, no, you don't. You don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
And she said it's because you see these kids who grew up my middle school years, everyone was emo and mm-hmm. listening to the music and the hair and the makeup, whatever.
Ours was school shooters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yours was school shooters.
Trench coats.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That cupcake fade.
Yeah.
And, you know, the emo kids grew out of
high
it.
High score.
Right.
Stop.
And they grew out of it. And now, you know, this is the new thing.
Yeah, so
and
this is
so
the replacement for being unique and... sort of brooding and very, you know, there's so much more to me. I'm an onion. You need to know
right.
all the layers.
Shut up.
Exactly.
You're 16. You don't know shit.
Yeah. Exactly.
I just thought that was so interesting.
So she said, and a lot of it coincides with the North Carolina trans, the Supreme Court case eventually about, you know, North Carolina, what was it, not deciding, or they said, whatever your gender is on your license is the restroom you need to use.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's been a lot that's been, you know, tried in the courts over and over and over. And so, trans and like gender has even the biological basis has been, you know, left behind long ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's about, well, whatever makes you feel comfortable and gives you mental peace, which
exactly.
I'm all for. Like,
sure.
You know,
yeah,
I don't care if it's Islam, if it's Christianity, if it's Jack Daniels, if it's your gender, if it gets you, you know, gives you peace and happiness, whatever you need to do.
Yeah, if you're not hurting other people, go for it.
And right. so, like, now, though, it's gone even further where it's beyond gender and it is even into the area, like, it's in the realm of fantasy and fiction. And, like, so there was a guide put out that talked about when certain genders are appropriate or situationally appropriate.
Right.
And what those gender... I forget who put out the guide. The Street or The Heat or whatever really made fun of it and just wrote an outright condemnation, and so did National Review.
It would be The Heat then.
Yeah, but so they were mocking it. It was on, like, I think, College Fix. And she wrote a guide about when certain genders, you were culturally appropriating them and it was no longer okay. Because you could use a Navajo, in certain elements, a masculine Navajo gender identity... would be cultural appropriation, and you need to think about that, what you're doing by perpetuating that myth. And I thought, how did nationality get infused with gender? And that's the thing, is it's become like a situationally specific role. Like that, it's really no different.
But they don't
want
it to be.
What it has become is whatever that person finds offensive. And so that is the difference between the rule of law and the rule of man. The rule of law says everybody's free except you can't do these things to each other.
Right.
And we're going to write them down and they're not negotiable. Don't hit your sister. Don't steal your neighbor's stuff. Don't do these things. The rule of man is whatever the man decides, that is the rule.
And anything outside the norm that they can convince 51% they don't like.
And so if you read Animal Farm by Orwell, it is basically the old order is cast off, a more fair order is instituted, and everybody is equal, and then eventually all animals are equal except for...
Mm-hmm.
Some are less than equal than others. I mean,
carve out, that's the path to hell.
And so essentially what we are asking for in these generations and in this strain of thinking is whatever you are offended by is how we're going to legislate culturally. That isn't a workable framework for society.
No, because eventually every accommodation and carve out, you create this dragnet where it's impossible not to offend anyone ever because of the number of carve outs. Like it's walking on landmines.
Right.
Right.
You know, you can't. And so the best bet is just always offend.
Just always be the offensive. Best defense is a good offense.
Other people's opinions is a prison. I've lived in that
prison.
Oh,
it's nothing will rob you of your soul faster than society.
Right. Other people, and Kat and I have a lot of, you know, life discussions. And so we were talking recently about normal.
Mm-hmm.
And normal is something that other people try to, you know, Kat doesn't always dress the way that the other girls in her sorority dress. And they're like, well, you know, and they kind of, they poke fun and
they
mock
shame.
That a little bit. They shame you, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Collectivists, yeah. Always use shame.
And I'm tired of it.
And make you doubt yourself. Mm-hmm. And I hope I'm not oversharing here.
No, go ahead.
Okay. And she's like, why is that? I'm like, because they are trying to get you to conform.
Mm-hmm.
And so they are nudging you to act the way that they act because that is comfortable for them. And if you choose to accept that as what as normal and you betray who you are, then you are asking for a life of misery.
Well, it's only external validation.
Exactly.
The only
right.
way you'll ever feel good about yourself if you accept that is by making them happy.
Right.
Earning praise.
And very much the same. You know, we had a, you can hear it on our SoundCloud, but a program called Creating Maya about someone's transition. And a lot of that, it wasn't about the transition. It wasn't about the chopping up of genitals. It was about self-acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know?
So, and mental peace, like accepting, you know, finding whatever it was, whatever definition or whatever identity, you know, she needed to put on herself.
Right.
That got her to a place where she wasn't outraged and angry and, you know, upset it with everyone else all the time.
Yeah, it helped a little.
It never does.
But, I mean,
but that's still blaming others.
But that is freedom. If, you know, I am a Christian and I believe the Bible is the written word of God. And so do I want to go to a church that has an ordained gay pastor? Absolutely not. Because you want someone who is trying to live as close to the written biblical word as possible. And everybody sins and falls short of the glory of God. Of course, I certainly do. I'm one of the worst Christians alive, but you still want to uphold that. But no denomination should be forced to ordain gay pastors. And if people want to go to a church with ordained gay pastors, go for it.
Mm-hmm.
That's your choice. That's between you.
What have you accepted is true and you're comfortable with? And go find it.
Exactly right. And that is freedom.
Total freedom.
And the allowance of other people to live their life as they see fit, as long as it is not hurting you, is freedom. That is what libertarians are trying to strive for. And I'm comfortable with people living their life and being different than me and not trying to force them to live the way that I want them to live and using the force of government to do it.
I agree. Like I see for the longest time, I really despised the cultural preservationists that used government force to try to say, well, you're an AOPI, so you need to wear, leggings, a North Face jacket, Uggs, and then a Nike Dry Fit hat, and then put your ponytail out the back.
Right, and drink a Starbucks drink.
Irma Gerd.
Irma Gerd.
Yeah. And so for the longest time, I really hated that element of the political element. But now the left is Soviet left. They demand uniqueness and accommodation, but with an AK-47.
For them.
And if you're not unique, that is something to, you know, that's actually an act of offense.
If you are different in the way that they you are allowed. It's like George.
It's no different.
It's like the calling the Obamacare exchanges. Like, this is free market. Like George Bush did this prescription drug
Medicare Part D.
Medicare Part D, where he basically said, it's the free market at work. And basically, the government approved 3 or 4 different people that you could choose from, and he called it free market. Well, no, dumbass. That's not the free market.
Yeah.
That's
I can put my head up a bull's ass.
Right. That's not free market. That's socialism.
Exactly.
That's a lack of choice. And
sounds
so,
pretty free to me.
It's culture. You know, it's mercantilism. It's culture, cronyism.
Right. And so basically what the Marxist left is forcing us to do through shame, public shaming.
You will be gender non-binary, or you will go to jail.
Well, you can be different, but you may choose in these categories how you may be different, or there will be consequences.
Absolutely. The thing is, though, with collectivists is the camaraderie. So the camaraderie among the left is way different than the camaraderie on the right. Whereas with the right, there is a more individualist, you know, identity within like the American right. And then the left, though, it is all collectivist, and the camaraderie and the lifestyle and the cool kids. Right. You see it in media all the time. Like, that's why everyone hated Donald Trump in the media, because even giving him a fair shake meant no longer getting invited to the art gallery opening at the Met, and then right. the new restaurant in Soho that opened.
Yeah.
You were no longer acceptable company. And so that's the strain of the Soviet New Left in the United States. However, that isn't going to last, because unless they just simply eradicate out like the American mythology of, you know, go west, young man, manifest destiny, individualism, pick yourself up by your bootstraps, you know, good versus evil of the individual versus the rest of the world, there you're not going to be able to just imprint upon like all these complete collapse of traditional customs and norms that have sure. tied us all the way. They, you know, that's the thing about traditions, is they tie you to your past.
Yeah.
And that's how you define yourself through the framework. You know, people that are adopted spend most of their life trying to find their biological family simply because they want to know their origin and their creation myth.
Belonging is as important as food and water is to the human soul.
Absolutely.
And that is why we have storytelling. It is our information transportation for the human mind. That storytelling through institutions like family are how people
the story, like Pat's parents, the Greek, like her grandpa's right. having to stop in Elkhart because he literally ran out of money, get a job, build a billiards company. The son takes it over and grows it. That's the American success story.
And she takes from that the values that her ancestors had, and then she puts those to work.
The pride of, you know, taking initiative and building your own thing, and, you know, being the originator and taking it upon yourself, rather than, you know, going to work at a factory and saying, look at the middle management going on Hawaiian vacations and we can't even get $2 more an hour, yada, yeah. yada, yada. Like, that, as long as that spirit isn't eradicated out, I think there'll be a constant break against progress. But like, if you look at the cultural Marxist, the school, I'll just read you what their goals were.
Okay.
And you can tell me, Kat, and you see if how we're doing against what they wanted to do 70 years ago.
Right.
Okay.
All right. Number one goal stated: first, support the dilution and then abolishment of majority cultures via the politically correct dominance of minority and immigrant cultures, typically using slurring accusations of racism, fascism, and white supremacy to attack those who oppose our platform of political correctness.
Mm.
Number one goal.
Now, who wrote these goals?
The Frankfurt School. This is the goal.
This is
cultural infiltration in would have been mid-1950s.
Okay. Wow. All right.
Afterwards, a smoothing over of all the remaining cultural mass into an amorphous and unoriginal blob, which loses all aspects of its former cultural identity and is henceforth molded into a new and unprecedented form of being. Second goal. Well, that's what you're worried about. Where does this end? An amorphous blob that's undefined, you know, except through public opinion and peer like acceptance.
Right.
So then it goes on. Sorry, I have to go to the next page.
So unprepared.
But gender, like, so the bullet points note is gender elimination.
Right.
So the breakdown of the nuclear family.
Mm-hmm.
Then it goes into a breakdown of basically like capitalist institutions such as marriage.
Right.
Eliminating that, the elimination of any type of corporate limited liability reform, like corporations not having full liability for loss.
Right.
Eliminating that and replacing it with worker-driven guilds where, you know, it's a committee that decides how best to organize and run everything.
Right.
Democratically elected committee. And then the complete dissolution of any lasting vestige of man, male or female roles that are defined through the sex.
Huh.
So, like your grandmother, you know, you stay at home, raise the kids, take domestic duties. Mm-hmm. Shame that out of culture entirely. And so there is no predisposition towards what role you should play, whether domestic or in mm-hmm. your professional career.
Right.
I mean, all of these things that we've made tremendous. The progress has been enormous.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And it's really the Frankfurt School is where it was the academic crowd that started this. But then you always need a political class to actually implement these things.
Right.
And those have their roots in the Fabian Society.
Right.
In Fabian socialism, what that was the idea that rather than revolutionary communism, which revolutions typically fail. Like, that's why people say American exceptionalism is we were the exception to the rule of revolution leading to chaos like in France.
We are literally the only peaceful transfer of political power from one...
In existence.
In existence, where we went from one form of government to another. I mean, you can say that it's...
With people trying to, you know, split us up.
Sure.
You know, foreign entities trying to get, like, individual states to pick right. sides. Like, we, you know, we made it. Which is, yeah. it literally, it's not that we're the greatest country on earth, like, through the way people mean it when they say it.
Right.
American exceptionalism, we're the unicorn. We're the Neo or the anomaly.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so, by undermining these things, these sort of the idea of Western great thinking, all the way going back to, like, the Greeks, you know, those people...
You're
welcome. You know who Plato is?
Yeah.
Do you?
She's playing with Plato right now.
Of course. My
mortified.
People.
Absolutely mortified.
The three best friends. We're the three best friends. Are you, the three best friends.
Have you seen the movie 300?
No.
Really?
Oh, I've heard of it.
The Peloponnesian War?
I want to know. One of my goals is to get more into Greek. I just know like the modern Greek stuff.
She's going to get more into Greek style.
Like the debt crisis?
Yeah, I'm really into just... borrowing a lot and never returning.
Well, that's what sucks. Like, going there, though, for you would suck because it is what you're seeing is like this the violent militant left, like lighting buildings on fire.
Right.
The social war, like the class warfare, is turning into physical warfare there. Mm-hmm. You know, you're getting these Antifa people who show up and light buildings on fire and, you know, yada, yada, yada.
Well, listen, communist, you motherfuckers.
That's right. And so
We're libertarians is here to stop you.
Well, the reason her great grandpa.
We're not putting up with your bullshit anymore.
Yeah. So, like, the reason your great grandpa came here was because of communists.
Right.
And, like, the rise of fascism, like Benito Mussolini's mm-hmm. fascism. They were fleeing, and the United States CIA in the 1970s, like late 80s, 70s, 60s, we used Greek double agents
mm-hmm.
to arrest and illegally detain. George Papandreou, who was a communist and one of the like Nazi sympathetic strongman elements,
mm-hmm.
we have Tejunta back Tejunta with the CIA to take him, put him in prison, and then that's why they never fell to the like Italy did.
Interesting. Mm-hmm.
And so we've even like the reason you're here is yeah. because of Karl Marx.
Wow.
They fled. The original foundation was because of their communist ideas. And that turned into strongmen, and so that you would not even be here had he not, you mm-hmm. know, written Das Kapital.
Yep.
Because you know, he fled. And now Papandreou's heirs are in elected Greek officials, communists.
Yeah.
Because now it's cool, and before,
right?
To you know, we helped to basically do a nice little Pakistani tribunal and commandeer him and
so,
take him out.
So, okay. So we had the Red Scare in the 30s, 20s, right?
Oh, no, 50s. Scare. McCarthyism.
Wasn't there two Red Scares?
So the Soviet Union, a lot of Americans, like in the Greenwich Village, had all gone to the Soviet Union. Mother Jones, who the website's named after, Jack Reed, who's buried there. It was the great communist experiment of Karl Marx, led by Vladimir Lenin, mm-hmm. his protege Leon Trotsky, and then Stalin was the operations man, who eventually became the
right.
dictator. And so, but in the 1920s, that was entirely the Bolshevik Revolution. It was the working class having a revolution against the merchants or the urbanites or the globalists.
Right.
Interesting.
And so that's the 1920s. But Americans were fascinated with it. Tons
yeah.
of the elites went over there to live and subsisted at poverty levels just to say they were a part of it. Like Jack Reed's buried there.
It was trendy to be. It's
always been trendy.
It was trendy to flirt with Nazism, with
Queen Elizabeth, Nazi,
Mussolini. Yeah, Mussolini. You know, was revered, and Hitler
oh,
was
absolutely.
Time Man of the Year.
Yeah,
you know,
Hitler was Time Magazine's Man of the Year in 1944.
Wait, yeah, that's
not 44.
What? Or sorry, 41.
2 years.
It had to be in the 30s.
Was
yeah.
it in the 30s?
It was in the 30s. There's
well,
no
he didn't
way.
Know, but he didn't take head as head of the Third Reich from...
No, he was head of from 33 on.
Well, he didn't even win the election. He took it over from Hindenburg or Wyden.
They started winning in 33.
Yeah, but
and
they never got more
over,
than 22% of the seats.
Right, but then they started taking over...
He
yeah,
just kept
it was
winning.
38,
and Germany never got sick of 39, winning.
39, because yeah. they invaded in 41.
That's
and,
right.
And they invaded in 40 into Poland, Czechoslovakia.
Oh, yeah. Russians and the Germans took Poland like and just started, you know, like it was a game of tug of war.
Well, right. And the reason I bring it up is because, like you said, it was trendy for the elites to go live like that. And I remember seeing the interview with Lucille Ball, right? Who was like a socialist, communist.
Oh, yeah.
Like
she
that.
Was a suspected Communist Party member.
But it's interesting, the reason that, you know, the Red Scare kind of happened was fear for the war, right?
Absolutely. Because really, the Soviet Union, by the 50s, we realized it was no longer a social experiment of, you know, Greenwich Village liberals trying to perfect society.
He was starving 7 million people in the Ukraine.
Yeah.
Right. So my question is, because I guess you could say the war and all that was going on, that's what changed drastically from it's cool to be communist and socialist to got to be the nuclear family. So my question is there going to be something big for us that's going to flip the snowflakes?
An inflection point?
Back to...
That's a good question, because the flaw of communism has always been the same thing. You can never find the perfect, you know, philosopher king to run it so that it works.
Mm-hmm.
It always turns into totalitarianism with mass, you know, killings.
Yeah.
No one's ever been able to take it and actually like create, and the reason why is it's opposed to human nature.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that humans aren't foundationally driven by self-preservation and so are therefore slightly selfish and self-interested, you can't ever eliminate that because we're animals. It's an instinct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The ideas of communism are about trying to eliminate the self. There is no individual. There's only the collective and your role in that in order to create the perfect harmonious society where there's no hunger, there's no poverty, there's no sick, or, you know, there's no stratification by class. It is a big amorphous blob,
mm-hmm.
where you get cared for, you know, from each according to their ability, to each according to their needs. So you work for the community based on your skill set that's assigned to you, and then you are given what you need.
Even if you look up at New Harmony, Indiana, Google it, and
yep.
It was
Robert Owen.
Robert Owens. It wasn't even started by Owens, but it was one of the first communistic societies.
And he had one be successful in Scotland prior to.
Right, and so he came here, and it was a miserable failure.
Huge.
But still, mm-hmm. Indiana has something called the Common School Fund, which was put into the Indiana Constitution by the Owenites, which says that the Indiana Constitution says that we will have school government schools.
Correct.
So, here in Indiana.
Publicly government-run schools.
All right, let's start wrapping up. So final thoughts for this episode.
Go ahead, Kat.
It was a lot. Wow, my first episode as a woke. Co-host. I was woke. I'm
there,
woken up.
This was a pretty healthy display of weaponized autism.
Yeah, well,
it's important, though,
woo!
Because everyone thinks it's trendy or that these things just happen.
Right.
Exactly, and it's
ideas
cool.
run the world.
Absolutely.
These ideas, the no gender, the amorphous blob, the no sex roles, the, you know, all these things, and no marriage.
Ideas have consequences.
There was a group of men and women who were very intelligent, got in a room, decided it, and then put together a plan for implementing it, and now it's here. You're not cutting edge. You're 70 years late.
And now a bunch of drunk nerds sitting around a table in Indiana have started a podcast to end their reign of miserable communistic terror.
Damn right.
And, you know, like I said, like you see, 9/11 was the big rallying point for the country.
Oh, it was the first time the United States had been like united like that since 9/11. Dropping the bomb.
So my question is, what's next? What's going? And that's where we got to my original question to start this podcast off was, you know, is this liberal snowflake trendy everything? Is it going to be, this is how it's going to be forever? Or are we going to have something or some group of generation that stops it? So very good. Good.
What
podcast.
Do you think?
Me personally, you know, just with the peers and the way my people my age are and seeing how they are, these radical ideas, it scares me a bit, because the only people keeping us sane and the people we look up to and get our wisdom from are the baby boomers, the older people. And when they're gone, what's going to happen? However,
do you look as baby boomers as signs of, or as figures of authority?
Not necessarily. Well,
you do.
And I'm not judging. I'm literally asking.
No, to answer for you, if I may mansplain.
Sure.
Mansplain.
She'll have the lobster bisque and then a side salad
yes,
right on the ranch.
Please.
She literally, when
right.
we go out to eat, she's like, order for me. I don't care.
No, I don't order for, no, I, no. I say, yeah, I'll have whatever he has.
Yeah.
Because I'm a girl. I don't like to speak. Anyways, go on.
All evidence to the contrary.
The three best friends are the three best friends.
No, Kat is, you know, she's 20.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she's so far advanced for the average 20. It was stunning. Absolutely. It's stunning. Yeah.
But
oh,
she's thanks, she's very much, you know, she's very much a...
old soul.
But she cares about what her parents think. She has the parental order very much still in her thinking patterns. And
Greeks are much more, you know, culturally familial than other yeah. ethnicities.
So I would say that you're more eager to abide by authority than go against it.
Yeah.
And I'm the same way. I mean, right. Greg's the
I've one. Been, I was like, I can't remember what my experience was that made me so anti-authority as a young kid, that I've been an iconoclast and absolutely immediately whatever the status quo was, I viewed it suspiciously.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Since I was a very young kid. I would do whatever I had to avoid getting in trouble.
Yeah.
Well, and I kind of agree with that. However, I think it's more of, because I'm the same way, but for me, it's more of, I look to the people like, you know, baby boomers or older millennials, the other ones, you know, they've been around longer. They've had these successes. We're here when, you know...
They've seen, you know, they've actually experienced it rather than just talking about it out of a book.
They've experienced the real deal instead of recreating panic for our chance to be in the history books.
Yeah, she's also feeling out the edges of intellectual rebellion.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so she's kind of going, okay, all these things that I've been taught, I'm going to question a little bit. I want to know what is really going on. And I see all these people who tell me I should think this way, but it doesn't match what I've been taught. And what if nothing's true? Let me all figure it out.
And the big
live
disconnect.
On this podcast. This is a real. This is you know what this is. This podcast, this show is now watching me grow up.
Yep.
And just
you're like,
be woke.
You're like our little DJ Tanner.
I'm a little DJ Tanner.
Cut it out.
I'm going to come back 30 years for the, all right, welcome to We Are Libertarians episode 4290.
Let me tell you how wrong you mother.
And I'm going to walk in and be like, hey, guys.
My name is no longer Catherine.
It's number 427.
Names are a social construct.
I'm number 427.
The thing is, what's really funny is if you think about it, is that only in the human experience do we even talk about things because of our ability to reason, like social construct or Kat's awful, awful breath.
Sup.
Thank you. But like when we talk about, like, in nature, there isn't this concept of equality. There are lions that are top of the food chain. There's a hierarchical natural order. Only in the human experience do we take, well, what is fairness? What is justice? What is equality? And so you have to wonder sometimes, is like, all the best learning, it does not correspond whatsoever to our actual biological experience.
Right.
And so, like, what Kat's going through is everything she's learned, it's shocking you kind of identify as libertarian, though, because usually it's, I was raised in a strict or in a very structured upbringing. I've always respected authority. I get to college. What I've been taught no longer corresponds with what I'm experiencing. I'm going to just go radically the other way and be a hardcore feminazi that doesn't shave my armpits and wears, you know, military boots.
Well, she does those things.
Right.
Hashtag fashion.
Hashtag fashion. Hashtag accept me.
But interestingly, like, you're sort of like dancing in between the two.
Right.
You cherry pick from both sides what you've found to work for you, but you're still on like a discovery process.
And I think it's, yeah, and I think it's because, you know, yeah, like, I grew up learning one thing and I get to college and it's totally the opposite. It's
radically different.
Radically different. And it's all these kids who I see it, and I kind of like to see things through a third party's
perspective. Outside perspective.
You know, I see these kids, well, okay, of course they're rebelling against their parents because I look at the science of it. They're on their own. They're doing this. They're doing that.
And that's the new status symbols, you know, in college is rebellion.
And I see, you know, the 60s, the 70s, these people who were rebellious, and now they're working corporate jobs.
Oh, John Kerry actually led a protest against American imperialism and intervention after Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
Now, prior, you know, in the last administration, he's the man that was head of Secretary of State and arguably the biggest globalist the most neoconservative type of individual. I mean, he was the one who drew a red line for going into Syria. Like, and this is a guy who protested the war in Vietnam because, you know, it's now we know that what is true is that they were his whole generation. He lost friends. They were lied to about the Gulf of Tonkin. The United States instigated it in order to draw the United States into a war to stop
what was the best foreign policy thinking at the time, domino theory, that communism from Karl Marx would spread like wildfire, like dominoes.
Yep.
Turns out it doesn't work because eventually you run out of other people's money to spend.
Yep.
And so we were drawn into that. All these people died, and it was decided by elites in a private circle. And then this guy, it's so ironic, he's the one doing the deciding among the group of elites.
Yeah, absolutely.
But so, yeah, do people moderate? Yeah. Exhibit A.
Right.
Exhibit A.
Especially because their personal interests start to align.
Right. And so I think that's interesting, you know, as I grow up seeing it one way and then I get to college and it's radically different and these people are protesting. But because of the way I grew up and partially because I'm a third party kind of person or third
independent
view.
Thinker.
Independent thinker, I guess, is that I see what they become.
Mm-hmm.
And so my question is, I like to learn a little bit of everything. Like we said, I'm a curious person and I don't know. It's just it's interesting.
It is. Where do you think it'll go, though? This is me demanding you critically think.
Where do I think the country will go?
Where do you think it'll go?
I mean, before this discussion, I thought we're just going to all be numbers and blobs and nothing will be anything and all of that. But I don't know. Now, like you said, it's not a new thing. They're 70 years too late. And I think I think at the end of the day that if it could work and it would be better for society, it would have happened. This is 2017, you know what I mean? The Earth's been around 2017 years old. But
so you're saying that based on historical evidence that you think it will moderate and won't be as radical of change and societal overthrow as what it looks like it could be right now?
Yeah, and I think it's because, and also I think we're going to have something, and I mean, obviously I hope we don't, but just look at history. It seems whenever humans get too complacent and too cocky, something comes.
Yeah, some sort of crisis, like existential crisis that
unites
they the define people. Them. It defines them from there on.
You watch the Civil War, you watch the war.
Well, that was a war of northern aggression.
But you watch the Ken Burns documentary, The War, and you just watch the beginning, and it's just like, this is like a species self-correcting.
Right.
Society's
organic. Like, it very much, it's dynamic, it's constantly changing, and so any action has an equal and opposite reaction.
And I think that, like you said, you're people's personal interests will get in the way of things, and I think humanity's, especially my generation's, need and desire to be different will get in the way of the need and the desire to have nice things and do big things.
Because ultimately, at the end of uniqueness, there is no social reward, collective reward.
Uniqueness is bullshit.
We're, in and of itself, it's a collective thought.
We're all human animals. You know, it's like Indy cars, okay? Indy cars are made by one maker, Dallara, and everybody can customize them to certain proportions, but they're still...
You can put any color paint you want on it, and it still came from Dallara.
You watch F1, and the cars are all made by different people, but at the end of the day, they're all still F1 cars. They all work to a specific standard, you know? And, you know, we talk all the time about, okay, well, this happened as a child, so this outcome happens, and this behavior takes place, you know, and... You know, I'm codependent because of things that happened in my childhood that I've had to work through in therapy and adulthood.
And it's so stunningly hard. You would think it'd be easy once you're aware of it.
Right.
That's what gives me great hope that, like, there is always there's a pullback constantly to any change because it's so hard to let go of even the most things you know and are aware of.
Absolutely. And so a codependent person, I am an individual, I am a special little snowflake myself, but when I go and read books about codependency and the adult children of alcoholics, you know, you read the various like behaviors
and characteristics,
you just go,
and stories,
holy shit, they just wrote my biography. There is a great book that I recommend everybody read. It's called Scary Close by Donald Miller. It is a great book. You can read it in 2 hours. It changed my life, and it is about his, you know, codependency and basically his need to seek out fame and approval from other people and
constant external validation.
And I was just like, this guy just wrote everything that goes on in my head. And it made, you know, I've recommended it to so many friends, and so many friends have had their lives changed by it too, and I would really highly recommend it. And basically what it comes down to is that there is a template for the human animal, and we all follow that same template. And yes, we are unique and different and different colors, and we need to learn to accept each other, but at the end of the day, there still is
a common bond.
A common bond, and that's why I loved the Stuart Huff interview that we did. I think it was around 130, 140, yeah. somewhere in the mid-100s.
Back at the old Morty's Comedy Club.
Yeah, 134, I feel like, is what my brain is saying. And Stuart Huff basically talked about, you know, this car crash that he saw, and human beings ran towards it, and not one person, as they're running towards a car that had wrecked to help another human being, did they ask, is this guy a Republican? Mm-hmm. Is this guy a Jew? Is this guy black? I'm not going to help him. You know, is this guy slightly sexist? Like, we don't. We don't.
Does ask, he have a? Is he one of those podcasters?
We don't ask.
We could
those
use
questions.
A lot.
Does she like Taylor Swift?
Yeah.
We just help each other, and that is the fundamental. I mean, that's humanity.
We don't like to see her pain. Like that's instinctual and absolutely. Evolutionary. Is we right. humans, as long as we experience it, we don't want to see pain.
Right.
If we just think about the theoretical pain of people experiencing pain and watching it happen. That's when everything changes.
Well, that's why I do think that a lot of, like, her snowflake friends, like, they don't want other people to feel bad and feel offended. But at the same time, that person, I needed to go through the bad things that happened in my life. You know, I needed to know that there were these things that happened that caused this thing, and all that made me tougher, smarter, funny. It's
you
all
can't
about.
Appreciate good until you've experienced bad.
I listen to those Taylor Swift songs and I see the depth in Taylor Swift's lyrics because of the pain that I have gone through in life.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
And so I would also recommend that people go and watch Oliver Stone's documentary, The Untold History of the United States. I recommended it in previous podcasts. It's on Netflix still. And it is a longer, more in-depth overview of kind of a lot of what we've talked about tonight. And you just see how history comes together and how things like the Cold War. The Cold War wasn't inevitable. The Cold War was a choice that our policymakers made.
Mm-hmm. Ideas that conflicted.
And so go and check out The Untold History of the United States by Oliver Stone. It's a great documentary on Netflix. All right, thank you everybody for joining us. Go ahead.
Just do the last. Basically, I would tell Kat to think about these things because this will basically give you your. Once you flush this out on which side you come down on, it'll sort of flush out the rest of what you believe your whole life is. That there are two schools of thought for a philosophy, and it's that are humans a blank slate or are humans? Is there something that is? Are they an animal with like instincts in their? Are predisposed to certain beliefs and behaviors.
Yeah.
Once you figure out which side you believe that, then that's where conservative versus like communist and liberal thought starts, because if you're a blank slate, we can make it do whatever we want and create a perfect world.
Mm-hmm.
If there are certain things we'll never be able to eliminate, we should always be conscious of those and be conservative in what we, prescribe and how we craft things and always consciously be aware that this may conflict with our nature. And so all of political philosophy and political thought, no matter where you go, and even religious thought to an extent, begins with how you view a man in his original state. And then beyond that, like the reason I'm a libertarian is that all of collectivism and Karl Marx assumes that man in his original state is with a group of people. I believe that man in his original state is an individual, because that's how I view things. And so man in an individual state, you arrive at totally different conclusions if he's alone rather than if he's with a group of people. And you introduce, would we talk about sharing and, preventing anyone from being really poor if we don't know what we're good at in that state. Yeah. And so just think about those things always, and then think about if something's trendy and it becomes like a virtue symbol or a status symbol among the cool kids at Ball State. Just go and investigate the history. Mm-hmm. And then I want to hear how you combat this and what you're going to do about it during your college experience. If you're going to tangle with it or if you're going to just accept that they'll eventually change. Because even Plato wrote about how damned the next generation was.
Yeah.
500 years before Christ, they were having the exact same things about societal collapse because of the ridiculous Gen Zers and their,
George Orwell wrote Animal Farm in 1984 because of the imminent collapse of society and a communistic state, and here we are. And
it's the same discussion happening right now. There is change, but the fundamentals don't change in that once you become less familiar with the way a trend is going, you're sure that's the path to hell.
Yeah.
And that's all lectures over. Class is out.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to this episode of We Are Libertarians. Thank you, Kat, for being here.
Thank you for having me, boys, because we're the three best friends. The three best friends. The three best co-hosts. The three best friends.
The whole show is your question.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well done.
Thank you.
We're just going
to You're coming into your own. You're starting to get a bit uppity. Oh. You're starting to take some, you know, authority that you clearly do not have.
Yikes.
We're going to have to change the name of the show to We Are Teaching Kat.
I feel like I have to be Roger Sterling a little bit and make sure she knows that the coffee needs to be done.
Well, maybe if I have these questions, somebody out there might have the same one.
So. Oh, we all do. We
if
all
I can answer one person's questions beside myself, yeah.
I
won.
I was listening to a great podcast that I love called Bad Christian, mm-hmm. all one word. And don't do that. Stop that.
Why?
You're making noise with the microphone.
Oh, sorry.
Some listener paid for that.
I'm teaching her mic technique. I stand behind her, wrap my arms around her. And
that's
say,
what the Google search was about.
Yeah. Weird help. All right. Well, thank you.
They sound like new libertarians to me because there is a paranoia about the imminent end of the United States and society. And I remember feeling the exact same way 10 years ago.
And our parents did. Their parents did. Every generation has always thought their generation was the one that was the end.
Yep.
The last great generation.
We just have to keep fighting against tyrannical bullshit and remember that we are the ones. The goal of this podcast and the goal of you listening, our goal is at this point not even to restore a constitutional government. It is just to continue to spread the ideas of liberty and to continue
infect the minds.
And infect the minds. And much in the same way that the little document from the mid-50s that he read about cultural Marxism, we have to articulate a society that embraces liberty. So that,
our plans and goals.
So that far in the future, Some fat kid on a Saturday night, lonely, laying in his bed.
Got his girlfriend pregnant from a hand job.
Has thankfully made it through that.
Funniest thing ever.
And so is laying in his bed reading 1984 going, I'm going to make sure this never happens to my society.
Damn right.
And so that's,
or revolts entirely.
That is what we are doing here, and we hope that you will spread the word of We Are Libertarians, that you will tell your friends about us. We thank you so much for joining us here on this episode of We Are Libertarians. And as always, we promise
to do better next time.
Thank you for listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Get our other shows at WeAreLibertarians.com.